Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. The weather has been terrible, actually. I don't know about anywhere else in the UK, but the weather personally here in Lancashire has been awful. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of that, it's not been nice, but yeah, there's not really much to do either. You know, kind of things have started to open back up again, but as I say, the weather's been rubbish, so it's not really the best day to kind of do things, is it? So, yeah, I've just been kind of doing nothing all day, really. So, yeah, as I say, hopefully the weather can improve, because personally for me, I'm going to Lancs next Thursday, not this Thursday coming, the 27th. We talked about this at the start, the 27th. So yeah, I'm really hoping that the weather's good then, and I'm looking forward to getting back. But yeah, hopefully the weather improves.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. It's been awful here in the Midlands as well, in Warwickshire. It's just non-stop rain. My debut still has not come either for my local club. 3 weeks now it's been postponed for. It's absolutely shocking. I mean, one day I will make the debut. Okay, that is going to happen in 2021, but the weather gods are having absolutely none of it at the moment. But yeah, Joe, in terms of the sentiment there about fans coming back, I can't wait either. I really, really cannot wait. 27th, Nottinghamshire at home. Be absolutely fantastic to get back to Edgbaston. I believe also some Lancs fans are there for the second 11 today, aren't they, Joe?
Yeah, they are. I don't know who the second 11 game is against, but there is a second 11 game at Old Trafford. So, yeah, it's like, I mean, obviously the second 11 still matters, but it's kind of like a test run because there won't be as many people there. Also, as I say, the weather is terrible. So there's less likely to be as many people there. Obviously, I'm not there, but yeah, I mean, it's, as I say, great that fans can go back in, and hopefully things are on the up.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed after what's been an absolutely horrid year and a half. It really has. Fingers crossed. And of course, for all those going to the cricket this week, enjoy yourselves. Enjoy it. We have earned it. We deserve to go back. And yeah, fortunately, and fingers crossed, I suppose, fingers crossed, the weather will be okay. But also joining us for today's wrap-up show here for round six of the 2021 County Championship, we are actually joined by a special guest. We're joined by Derbyshire County Cricket Club superfan and host of the Back to the Pavilion podcast, Hugh Lloyd. So, Hugh, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Oh, busy, but very much like Joe, the weather's been awful in Derby here today, but the sun is now out and shining, and hopefully it stays around until Thursday for me, because Thursday the 20th this week, Derbyshire at home to Durham. First time that I'll be able to go and watch some live cricket in 18 months, and you know, last season was the first time since 1994 that I'd not been able to watch any live cricket of a professional standard in person. So, you know, I'm looking at you two now, and but neither of you were probably born then. But no, you're both like nodding your heads at that. So, yeah, so 94 was the last time that I went in the summer without seeing professional cricket, and I can't wait to get back and watch Derbyshire, whatever the result may be.
Goodness me. Hugh, I'll tell you what, we've been talking here on the podcast actually about this. So for me, the last time that I can remember going this long would have been about 2014, when I was literally going to an odd game at Edgbaston here and there. But 1994, of course, a very famous year for my county of Warwickshire, just complete the treble in that year, of course. But yep. 1994, that is an incredible dedication. It really is to county cricket. That's absolutely incredible.
That is mad, yeah. That is mad.
I mean, I just love cricket, you know, and it, for me, you call me, you know, you call me a Derbyshire County Cricket Club super fan, but in reality, I'm just a cricket fan. I go, you know, my wife despairs because I'd happily go and watch Leicestershire thirds against, you know, Warwickshire fourths, and be more than happy to spend a day there doing that. I just love the game of cricket, love going and watching, you know, I just can't, and it's not the same without fans in the ground. You know, I'm very privileged that I hold a media pass as well. So last season I was able to go, and I don't count that as watching because it's working, but being able to be in the ground and hear the ripples of applause as people walk up and down the steps, and that, you know, just the little things like the sound of the bat on the ball, it's those things that people miss, and those little conversations that you have in the stands with people that you've never met before and will never meet again. You can't put a price on that, and I just can't wait to get back to that kind of that community feel of county cricket. It's been missing.
Can I just say, Hugh, I could not have put that any better. That was absolutely wonderful, the way in which you've just explained that. And we completely share that sentiment here on the County Cricket Podcast. We love our counties. We really do. It means the entire world to us. I mean, I posted a couple of tweets the other day on our account saying just how much Warwickshire means to me. Joe, it's the exact same for you with Lancashire. These counties really are almost part and parcel of our identity. And as you said, going there as a fan, it is unique, isn't it? Because I also love my football. Joe loves his football. Hugh, you're a big football fan?
I am. You know, not as much as I used to be. I'm a Sheffield United fan for my sins this season, anyway. And I've always, you know, I followed it, but it's not the same feeling. It's not the same experience of going to watch live football. And anyone who goes and watches football, cricket, it's just not the same. It's different. I'm not saying one's better or whatever, but you don't. For me, even though in football there's all the singing and the chanting and sort of joint celebrations with goals, for me, you still don't have that same community feel. You don't have that element of conversation. You know, you're not there for 8 hours, are you? So you're not going to develop that. But I think cricket's a really unique sport. And, you know, I think it needs to be nurtured. It needs to be cared for. It needs to be looked after. And in these times with, you know, the 100 coming up, which for me causes massive concern around the future of the county game, I think it's really important that places like Derbyshire, Leicestershire, Northants have that opportunity to continue to go and watch cricket, because if it goes, I don't think it'll ever come back, and you'll lose so much.
Absolutely, and we don't want that to happen. I mean, myself and Joe, we do support, you know, the test venue counties, but it would not be the same. Every single one of those 18 counties means just as much. Without one of those, county cricket is not the same. It's not the same without a Durham or a Derbyshire or a Sussex, for example. It is not the same. And that is what we love about county cricket. It's so unique. It isn't just city-based. As I said, it's part and parcel of our identity as actual residents of these counties. And as you rightfully said there, Hugh, we do need to nurture it. We need to protect it. And we need to safeguard the future of county cricket. And in fact, Hugh, I'll tell you what, if we have a future podcast episode about that, we will get you back on, mate. Because I can already tell that you've got some fantastic opinions.
Yeah, no, I think we've got to look after, you know, it infuriates me when people call Derbyshire Derby, because we're not just Derby, we are Derbyshire. You know, I grew up in a tiny little village, you know, out in the Peak District near Bakewell, land of the puddings. And we, you know, I didn't grow up in Derby. I live in Derby now, but I grew up in Derbyshire. And you start calling it by, you know, you would never call, well, I mean, I know that
we are Birmingham, yeah.
You are Birmingham Bears for T20. How much does that alienate people who come from Dudley, who come from, you know, Nuneaton, those kind of places? They're not from Birmingham. Are they going to, do they still associate with that? You know, you think, you know, Joe's a Lancashire fan. If you start calling Lancashire Manchester, does that then mean people from Blackburn don't support it? It's just, it's not. We've got a great history of county cricket in this country, which encapsulates so many people. We start turning to city franchises, we disenfranchise just generations of people.
You're not a fan of the Australian system then?
No, different in Australia. You look at the demographics of Australia, you've got those states, and you look at where the vast majority, I think it's something ridiculous, like 95% of people who live in New South Wales live either in or around Sydney. You know, you look at Western Australia, the vast majority of people who live in Western Australia live in Perth. So those highly densely populated urban conurbations, you can get away with it more because it's massive. You know, if you ever lucky enough to go to Australia, it's an amazing country, you know, just... The thing that struck me there was the vastness of it. And you could drive for hours and hours and hours and not see anyone else. But then you get to the cities and it's really densely populated. That, for me, is why the Big Bash works. I love the Big Bash. I think it's great. I think it's, for me, I prefer the Big Bash to the IPL. I think it's a far better tournament.
Someone else agrees with me, finally. Yeah, finally, someone else agrees with me.
Give me the Big Bash over the IPL any day of the week. But give me the T20 Blast over the Big Bash. Because for me, again, it's more inclusive.
Fair enough.
I always thought I was alone of that opinion.
We will be here, Joe, on the podcast. I'm certainly not changing my opinion. RCB through and through, mate. But no, fair enough. As I said, both are incredibly popular competitions, aren't they? Both offer quality cricket. And I suppose that is for that market. Again, it's different demographics in terms of the viewership.
And that's, I mean, you know, that's the thing, isn't it? It infuriates me when people go, oh, if you like 2020 cricket, you can't like Test match cricket. That's rubbish. Cricket's cricket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back to the 100. I've no issue with the 100. I don't, yes, it's changing. I don't understand why we needed to change 6 ball overs to 5 ball overs and 10 ball overs. I think if you, you know, if I found it really insulting to people to say, oh, no, it's too difficult to understand, so we're going to make it 5 ball and 10 ball overs. But what I really worry about is the long term impact, because if we have just those 8 teams, you know, George De Bell wrote an article this weekend about how it might expand to 12. That's still 6 counties that are going to go from the world. It's just not worth it. How many players might we miss out on because we, you know, remove those opportunities for people to play first class cricket? How many, you look at the current England Test side, how many of those players either started at a non-Test match ground or don't play at a non-Test match ground? We might not get to see some of those players.
England's greatest ever batsman.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
Yep.
Although I think Ian Bell played for Warwickshire, Jay. I should just get that Warwickshire bias in there. It'll be a theme throughout today's podcast.
Jack Leach doesn't play at a Test venue, just to clarify.
Nope.
For those wondering. So he is England's greatest ever batsman.
Oh, so, very good. Right. But yeah, I mean, this has been a very, very unique intro to our wrap-up show, but I think it has been very, very important. And you know what, Hugh? Thank you very much for those opinions. It's something that, again, we need to do an entire podcast on. We really do. I don't think that we can quite do it justice just fitting in 10, 15-minute conversation. But I tell you what, mate, you're more than welcome to come back on. Because yeah, it's really, really interesting listening to that.
You know, more than happy to come back on and talk about that anytime. Likewise, more than happy to come on and talk about Derbyshire or any county cricket. You know, it's just the best sport on the planet.
Yes, and we can certainly agree with that. So let's get into this week's wrap-up, because it was the 6th round of the 2021 Liverpool Victoria County Championship this week. Unfortunately, as Joe alluded to earlier, the weather in the UK hasn't been great. Lots of rain, even some hailstorms here in Warwickshire, unfortunately, but we did get 6 games in there. So in terms of the results from this week, we'll start with Group 1. Durham beat Worcestershire by 258 runs at the Riverside. Essex, Hugh, unfortunate for you here, mate, but Essex beat Derbyshire by an innings and 15 runs down in Chelmsford. Then moving on to Group 2, we had Hampshire beating Middlesex by 7 wickets within just 3 days at Lords. Somerset and Surrey, we say playing out of draw, but there's only 68 overs in the entire game. Unfortunately, the weather did play spoil sport in that particular encounter down in Taunton. And then finally, moving on to Group 3, Kent and Sussex played out a draw down in Hove. And finally, Glamorgan and Yorkshire played a draw in Cardiff. Again, lots of weather around, unfortunately. Not many results this week. Also, not many games. Only 6 in the 6th round due to rest and rotation policies with the counties this year. But there is still a lot to talk about. So before we get into the analysis, the talking points, and the standout performances, let's have a look how the county championship tables are shaping up. Now, unfortunately, my heart may have just broken too, because looking at the Group 1 table, our stint as the second place team has unfortunately come to an end. Oh, that's a sad, sad sight. But currently top of Group 1 are Essex on 76 points. Second are Durham on 73. Third are Nottinghamshire on 73 as well. Fourth are Worcestershire on 70. Fifth are Warwickshire in 67 points, but we do have a game in hand.
So that's what I was going to say.
Yep, do not fear, Warwickshire fans. We will be coming back. Exactly, no need to panic just yet. And then Hugh, again, I mean, your team does have a game in hand, but Derbyshire currently 6th, bottom place of Group 1 on 41 points.
For Warwickshire fans, you know, at the start of the last round, Essex were in 5th position as well, and they're now top. So I think that's one of the beauties of this format. One good result, and you can fly up that 6th, team table quite quickly.
Correct. Yeah, that is a fantastic point. And it's a testament to how close Group 1 has been this year, hasn't it? It's been incredibly tight, incredibly competitive. And again, definitely a group to watch out for heading into the rest of the summer. But moving on to Group 2 then, again, talking of a team with a game in hand who are still top though. Again, this is just a testament to how brilliant they have been this year. Gloucestershire currently occupy the top spot in Group 2 on 95 points. Somerset have moved up to second on 91 points. Hampshire 3rd on 82 points, Surrey are 4th on 68 points, Middlesex are 5th on 44 points, and currently in 6th are Leicestershire on 40 points, but with a game in hand. Now moving on to the third and final group, Joe, as well. Oh, it's ended.
Yeah.
Lancashire's time at the top has
ended. You say the group, and then I'll say what I think about this.
Well, Yorkshire, Joe's favourite county, are currently top of Group 3 on 98 points. Lancashire are currently second on 93, but with a game in hand, that does have to be said. Glamorgan are currently third on 69 points. Northamptonshire fourth on 68 points. Sussex are fifth on 64 points. And bottom of Group 3 are Kent on 49 points. Joe, what point did you want to make, mate?
I mean, you pretty much said it. We have a game in hand and we have to play Yorkshire in, what is it, week 8, I think? This is week 7 coming up. So, yeah, week 8. I mean, to be honest, just on Lancs' group quickly, I think the top two will be as it is now. So I can't see. Hugh just said that you can win a game and catch up. I don't see that really happening in Lancs' group, to be honest. We are us and Yorkshire are like 20 points clear of third. So
it'll be interesting to see how Yorkshire do when they've not got Joe Root
carrying them.
I think without Joe Root this week, I don't think Yorkshire get anything from that game.
Are they going to have Root available against Lancs?
2 weeks' time, no. Test match time.
We also have Jimmy, as I say, that would have been... How good would that have been? Root against Anderson.
They might have Milan back by then, though, after his...
That's fine.
It's already started. The Roses banter. Joe, save that for next week. But
yeah, that's fine.
Let's focus on the sixth round for the time being, and let's start with Group 1 then. And I suppose there is only one place that we can start this week, and that is at the Riverside, where Durham beat Worcestershire by 258 runs. And one man in particular, a guy who we've been talking about pretty much non-stop here on the County Cricket Podcast for the past few weeks, is Chris Rushworth. He has finally become Durham's all-time leading first-class wicket taker. He surpassed Graham Onion's previous record of 527 wickets. And he was just so impressive this week. He really was. And you could just see how much it meant to him as well. Broke down in tears, really emotional. I think his dad was there as well. His family were there in the car park. This meant so much to a guy who is born and bred in this county. This county means the world to him. It really does. So, Hugh, I'll start with you first, because you would have seen Rushy a lot in Division 2, of course, previously and this season. I mean, you're going to see him potentially this week. Well, up at the Inquiry Ground, actually, from here in Warwickshire. But how impressive is Chris Rushworth as a bowler? How impressive have you been with not only him this season, but just in general? Do you think that he gets enough credit as a bowler?
I think on the county scene, I don't think there's many more bowlers who are more highly respected than Chris Rushworth. When you think of his journey as well, I mean, he was released from the academy when he was younger and then fought his way back in through club cricket. And now to be where he is, to be the all-time leading wicket taker in first-class cricket, when you consider in as well within those wicket, you know, 28 five-wicket hauls, he's absolutely phenomenal. And he's ever been mentioned for sort of international recognition because, you know, you could say he plays for an unfashionable county, but then you consider Durham have had Harmison, Plunkett, you know, Wood. So it's not that. It's just I don't think his type of bowling is perceived to suit international cricket, when in reality, he can run in and he can bowl and he can put it and he can pitch it at the top of off. I think in an era without Lancashire's James Anderson, he might have got a mention because Jimmy performs a very similar job. Yeah, or, you know, Chris Wokes is perceived to be that kind of bowler as well. I think he's got a bit more zip about him than that. Sam Curran, I mean, left arm slightly different.
Yeah, true.
But I think Rushworth, if you were to ask the vast majority of county batters who they wouldn't want to face in, you know, early season condition or any conditions, let's be honest, I bet Rushworth would be in the top three of every county batter who's faced him. He's just monotonous. He never misses his line. He never misses his length. And he just moves it enough. And he's got that durability. You look how many games he's missed. He doesn't miss games either. Not through choice, or not through injury. It's only when he's rested. Doesn't really, you know, he doesn't play T20, so he's not got that element to his game with regards to strain on his body. He is an absolute just county legend. I'm not sure going forward if we'll see someone else do what Chris Rushworth done. You know, one county man, play the amount of games that he's played, take the amount of wickets he's taken. I generally think he could be the last of that kind of county stalwart type of era with the increase in white ball cricket and franchise cricket around the world. I'm not sure how many more Chris Rushworths we'll see, and I think that's a shame for the game. Imagine Durham without Chris Rushworth.
Well, you couldn't. You couldn't. He is Durham through and through. He really is. It means so much to him. And you know what? I love that. I loved his reaction. You could see how much it meant to him. it really did mean everything. I mean, it's like myself or Joe or you, Hugh, taking 528 wickets. I'd love to take that many in club cricket, let alone first-class county cricket. But this is a guy born in the county, been raised in and around that county setup. And then he goes on to become the leading all-time first-class wicket taker. And you know what? He never complains. He never complains in the media about not being selected for England or anything like that. He just gets on with his cricket. And as you said, Hugh, he's metronomic. It's an adjective that I utilise with spinners usually. But he's just constantly nagging line and length again and again and again. It's relentless. He forces batsmen into mistakes. And funnily enough, I found out that in this particular game, he got Daryl Mitchell out for the 9th time in his career. I mean, what an absolutely nightmarish stat that is for Daryl Mitchell. He must be just tossing and turning at night, thinking of Chris Rushworth's face appearing in his dreams.
It's like
or his
Siddle
nightmares.
And Peterson, isn't it?
Yeah, or Broad and Warner. It is crazy. He is such a fantastic bowler. Does not get enough recognition outside of the county circuit, in my opinion, at all. And you know what? He deserves it. He really does. He is such a phenomenal bowler, isn't he?
He is. And I think as well, if you only got to look at the reaction, I know social media can be an echo chamber, but and no one's going to, you know, he's not going to take that many wickets and then people go on Twitter and go, actually, he's a bit of a knob. But you look at the outpouring of people just saying, you know, not people just saying well done or that's fantastic, but actually saying, you know, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. You know, he's always got time for spectators. He's always got time for fans. He's always got time for other players. You know, if you speak to young bowlers who've played against him and gone and asked him for advice, he's always got time to like just pass on little tidbits of information and guidance for them. He loves county cricket, you know, and he wants to see good cricket played, wants to see it do well. He's such an asset to Durham. He's such an asset to county cricket and cricket in general. I couldn't be more pleased for him. He's just such a lovely bloke and he deserves it with everything, you know, like I say, being released as an academy prospect and then finding his way back in to then achieve that. And when you consider the bowlers that Durham have had, you know, Graham Onions, Steve Harmison, Liam Plunkett, you go back, Neil Killeen, you know, excellent, excellent bowlers who've not got anywhere near the levels that Chris Rushworth's got. And people, you know, will turn around and go, oh, it's Durham, it's, you know, green seamers, no one wants to go and bat up there in the cold and whatever. But no one else has achieved what he's achieved. You know, he deserves every accolade that he gets.
100%. 100%. And, well, I suppose us three here at the County Cricket Podcast today, not just the two of us, but we just want to say congratulations to Chris. What an incredible achievement. It really is. We can't over-exaggerate just how big an achievement this is. This is massive. Absolutely massive. So congratulations, Chris. Congratulations to Durham fans as well, because the team is obviously doing very, very well at the moment, currently second in Group 1. And just before we talk about Durham, actually, I did have a big overarching question about the northeastern side for today's podcast. But in terms of just some other fantastic performances in this week's game, I feel like the top order in particular really stood up to the mark. They really did. Alex Lees in the first innings was absolutely outstanding. I was gutted when he did not get a century. 99, I could not believe it. And it was on the stroke of tee as well. It was on the stroke of tee against Joe Leach. I mean, someone you don't want to be facing just before you go into the pavilion at all. He's a nightmare. He's a very, very much quintessential county seamer, a bit like Darren Stevens with his approach to the game. But oh, I could not believe it. I was absolutely devastated that Lees couldn't get that century. But two guys who did get a century in this game were Will Young in his final game for Durham for the time being, whether or not we'll see him back. Hopefully we do, fingers crossed, because he did look very, very impressive. And also Jack Burnham as well. He was so, so good. Incredibly impressive. He's a gritty, resolute character, isn't he? 102 not out. And they just put the Worcestershire bowling attack to the sword in phenomenal fashion. So, Joe, I'll actually start with you for this one. What did you make of Durham's top order this week? How impressed were you with the northeastern side's top order?
I think that's something that Durham have kind of been missing the last few weeks, is kind of like grit in the top order. I mean, even down to Ned Eckersley in the second innings, and he batted, what, six? Six. Scoring 86. So I think that's something that Durham have been missing. You know, they've got well over, well, pushing 300 runs between numbers 2, 4 and 6 there. So that's what Durham have been missing, I think. And I think that is a really good start. I know he's not been scoring the weight of runs that he did at the start of the season, but David Benningham there, with 33 as well in the second inning. So, look, he was obviously never going to score 200 or whatever he got in the first few weeks every game. But, you know, still to get 33, I mean, if you were averaging around there in first-class cricket, you know, you're clearly a good player. So, that's still not bad. So, yeah, I think that's a much improved performance from Durham this week. And as I say, something that they really needed, in my opinion.
I'm not sure as to whether or not I'd say much improved, because in the last game, they just dispatched us. They absolutely demolished
us. Just in
us
general, though, compared to the, throughout the season.
To the start.
We're in week six now. Correct. And Benningham was carrying the batting lineup. You know, Borthwick wasn't getting any runs at the start of the season. Benningham was carrying that batting lineup. Now, the runs have been so much more evenly distributed the last few weeks, as you say. So, yeah, much improved from the start of the season.
Fair enough, Joe. That is an excellent point. But I suppose my overarching and overriding question with Durham this week, we mentioned there, I mean, they've put the two West Midlands counties, Warwickshire and Worcestershire, to the absolute sword up north. They really have. They completely demolished us, and they were absolutely sensational against Worcestershire this week. Hugh, I'll start with you because you're a fellow Group 1 fan, right? Are Durham dark horses for Division 1? Because you look at that bowling attack, it is brilliant. I know that Mark Wood will be on England duties, but even then, you've got Brydon Carse, Chris Rushworth, you've got guys like Ben Rain, who destroyed us the other week. You've got Travaskis, who's a good young spinner. You've got a guy like Matthew Potts, who can come in as well. How much of an opportunity do you think Durham have to actually reach Division 1?
I think they've got a really good chance. You know, they have a lot of balance in that side. They've got, you know, I think I really rate Alex Lees. You know, I was really surprised when Yorkshire let him go, when they let him go a few years ago. I think he's a quality batter. Then I think David Bedingham is probably one of the looks like he could be one of the overseas signings of the year. He did a year there as Colpack last year. I think that's really paid dividends for Durham to keep him on. Will Young's come in, done really, really well. I know he's going, but it'll be interesting to see who comes in at the top of the order.
Hmm.
You got Scott Borthwick back, you know, the prodigal son returns after his, jolly down to Surrey for 3 years, and then he's come back. And I think he, having that local boy as captain, you know, you could see how much it means to him to be winning games for Durham as a Durham lad. I think that you can't put a value on that. And I think he's got a really good cricket brain as well. You talk to the people around Surrey, you know, he knows what he's talking about. It's no surprise to people with the Surrey battering staff that when he went to Durham, he was made captain. You then look, I mean, I think, you know, Brydon Carse, I can see him playing for England before too long. He was involved last summer in the massive, you know, bubble training camps. He impressed then, by all accounts. I can really see him. I could see him making the Ashes tour in the winter because he's got that bit of extra pace, that little bit of X factor. I could see him doing. I think, yes, you know, Mark Wood will be a big miss, but actually, you look how many times Mark Wood is the leading wicket taker for Durham in a match. It's not very often.
Mm.
You know, it's Chris Rushworth, you know, with his 5 wicket hauls for fun. Ben Rain, who is one of the most consistent, you know, all-rounders in the game. You know, you say he destroyed you last week. I think whenever I write a match preview for Derbyshire and when it used to be Leicestershire, my key men for the opposition was always Ben Rain. He always scores runs. He always takes wickets. He is a phenomenal cricketer. Travaskis, I think, was a fantastic signing over the winter as well. I think Durham squad has got real depth, and Jack Burnham's coming good again after, you know, he had his year off for being a naughty boy, but he's back now. And I think, and he actually, look, he took that on the chin. He spent that time away banned. He's come back. He's clearly worked on his game, and he looks a lot more consistent. Then Eckersley's come in as well. Again, and a player released by a county who might be looking back and going, "Oh, should we have really let him go?" He's come in and he's done the business. Stuart Poynter, you know, the Irish wicketkeeper, I think is a fantastic cricketer as well. Not enough gets made about his batting ability because he adds really good runs low down the order, and he's tied behind the stumps. Durham, I think, have got a fantastic squad. And if they get into that top group by the end, and if you've got Wood and Stokes who might want to make a little appearance for them to promote the county championship, that's only going to make them stronger. They can serious contenders, especially in Group 1 where everyone keeps taking points off everyone.
Yeah, that's been the theme, hasn't it, in Group 1 so far. You can't predict it. I'm not even going to predict anything Obviously, I do want the Bears to go through, but my goodness, it is going to be an absolute dogfight into that second round. It really will when we go into the division setup. But I agree, actually. I do like Durham. I like the setup of the county so far this season and their bowling lineup in particular. One guy who we actually haven't mentioned was Matt Salisbury. He had a fantastic start to the season. I think he took 11 wickets in three games. So once he comes back as well, that is another piece into the jigsaw. They are such an underrated county. And as I said, they're just kind of flying under the radar for the moment. But I'm telling you now, if they can continue to take consistent points, be up there heading into the final couple of rounds, they will fancy their chances. They really, really will. But I think that's enough about Durham for the time being. Of course, we could talk all day about Durham and, of course, our boy Chris Rushworth, because that was such a fantastic moment for Durham's finest. But I suppose we also have to talk about Worcestershire, because, again, they have not had the greatest start to the season. They still have not won a game. And this is just one thing that I would like to say, maybe a little bit of a bugbear. How are they above us when we've won two games? That's the only thing that does confuse me. Warwick have won two games. We've got the same number of losses, and yet we're 3 points behind them. Yes, we had an absolute shocker up at Durham.
Bonus that, points, isn't it?
Yeah, to be fair, we got 1 point up at Durham. That's our own fault.
There's your answer.
Yeah, but come on. If it was up to me, we would be above them. But
it's not up to you, though. You didn't make the bonus point rule.
No, and I think those 8 points for a draw this season, I think you will see skewed tables.
Mm.
Where, you know, if you lose badly, you and don't take very many bonus points, it's really going to affect you. You know, that those 8 points for a draw will skew a lot of tables. And I see different things about promoting positive cricket or does it promote negative cricket? I think it's promoted better pitches. But if you're willing to bat out for those 8 points, it's a massive incentive compared to, you know, getting rolled. So
isn't that ruins games because of the amount of points? Let's say it's, I don't know, 4 points or however many points, a lot less basically. Do you think that means that, as you say, teams are going to bat out for a draw? Do you think that rather than chasing 220 overs, they just block out for 20 overs? Do you think that ruins the game? Do you think that puts, let's say, new fans off?
I don't know. I mean, I love a draw. Oh, you ask me. My favourite cricketing memory of me playing the game is me and one of my best mates batting out, you know, 32 overs for 17 runs.
What kind of innings that?
And secure. You know, I think we counted at one point we didn't play a shot for like 4.5 overs. It was fantastic. But it's a skill, and I understand why they've put those 8 points in there for, you know, to encourage teams to not just throw the bat, because there needs to be more reward for drawing a game. I'd like to see maybe, and I know the bonus points do this in some way, but maybe more of a reward, you know, like you get in league cricket, winning draws, losing draws, that kind of idea. So, you know, when Derbyshire nearly beat Worcestershire, you know, we needed 2 wickets to get that win. It was by the skin of the teeth that Worcester held on. For me, do those 16 points available for a draw, in essence, are they divided equally, or do we get 10 and Worcestershire get 6? Something like that, where actually the team that's gone for the win...
Or should Worcester not get more because they survived by the skin of the teeth?
Trust me, in that game, they should not have got more. but no, I think it's changed the dynamic of the way that teams are playing cricket this year. I think it's certainly produced better pitches in county cricket this year. You know, you've only got to look at the number of wickets that spinners are taking, you know, in April and May. You know, who would have thought that, you know, Matt Parkinson at Lancashire would have taken as many wickets as he has, you know, Matt Critchley at Derbyshire.
I would have.
You know, I mean, Simon Harmer takes wickets. Simon Harmer could take wickets bowling on glass. Mm-hmm. But the amount of spin that's been bowled in the first 5 rounds of the county championship in April and May is brilliant to see. And I think that's down to the 8-point rule, because it's meant that county groundsmen haven't felt the need to have result pitches. I also think it's down to the conference system as well, because there's not that sort of stress on having to win games to avoid relegation or to get promotion. So I think it'd be interesting to see what the pitches are like in September when the county championship returns.
That is an excellent point. And of course, only time will tell, won't it? We can't make our crystal ball predictions just yet. But yeah, it will be very, very interesting. And I'll tell you what, 17 runs from 32 overs. Your mate isn't Dom Sibley, is it?
No. No, one of my best cricketing friends, it was an epic kind of, I'd forget what we wished for him, sort of like 8 and 9 batting together, 17 runs. It was a long, long time, but it was, you know, won games and lost games, but that's the innings for both of us that always sticks in our memory. It was such good form.
Yeah. Proper cricket, that. Just digging in there, grafting away, grinding away. Does not get much better. But moving the conversation back onto the pairs, of course, just before we go into, again, this week's overarching question about the Midlands side, Josh Tung was excellent, in my opinion. I think he bowled incredibly well, in particular in that first innings, took 5 for 39 from 19.2 overs. And then again, this is related to the question, Daryl Mitchell as well, he was very positive this week, 62, which included 8 fours. I like the way in which he approaches batting. And Jake Libby, again, keeps on showing promise. I know he didn't get a 50 or 100 plus score this week, but for that 36, he did look quite good. However, this does relate to my question, because Mitchell and Libby put on a 79 run opening partnership. They laid a really solid foundation. I know it was a really difficult chase, of course, up at the Riverside. It was always going to be incredibly tough, but they collapsed from 79 for none to 164 all out. Now, when we look at Worcestershire's batting performances this season, you can see that the lion's share of the runs are coming from Daryl Mitchell and Jake Libby. Of course, that is expected. They are the opening combination. They're both fantastic openers. You've got Jake Libby scoring 545 runs, a ridiculous average of 77.85, decent strike of 42.18 as well. And then you've got Daryl Mitchell scoring 258 at 28.66. Now, gents, my question for you and the listeners is, are Worcestershire too over-reliant on that Mitchell and Libby opening pairing? Yes or no? I know Ed Barnard has scored runs as well, just to give him a quick mention as well. Currently their second lead in run score with 324 runs. But other than that, I'm looking through. Haynes, fair enough, in 2 games, 119 runs. Leach, 156. Tom Fell, 236 runs. Ricky Vessels, 192 runs. Are the pairs too over-reliant on that opening pairing? No pun intended.
I would say yes, personally. I mean, it goes back to, I've mentioned it before with, he was brilliant this week. As you will know, Hugh, Simon Harmer and Essex, they rely on him way too much. He got nine wickets, and you know that happens every now and then, occasionally, sure. But Simon Harmer, he gets 7 for 8 for all the time. Not all the time, but he gets them quite regularly. Mm. You know, they rely on him way too much. Worcester don't want to turn into a kind of side where they rely on their two openers. What if one of them gets injured? What if one of them hits a bad run of form? Look at Leicester with Sam Evans. He got 100, got injured. I thought he dropped. It was dropped. Obviously, he wasn't. And then the next 2 weeks, he goes and gets hundreds. So, you know, I'm not saying it's a similar kind of thing, but what if he got injured again for a longer period of time? You know, what if he missed a month rather than one game? What if Libby gets injured for... Or what if Libby goes and plays for England?
Mm.
Then what are they going to do? They're in trouble. So, personally, I would say they're relying on too much at the moment, but they've not kind of got into Essex's over-reliance of Harmer kind of territory where he carries the whole team every week.
Essex yeah. fans will disagree with you there, Joe, as would I.
Maybe, all right, yeah, but that's the thing though. Like, it's all good saying he only carries the ball in, but they can't bowl teams out if without Harmer. So then how on earth are they going to... It's going to be impossible to win. If you can't bowl a team out, you're never going to win. That's how it goes. So, you know, even if they only rely on him in one aspect, it can still affect the whole game.
Interesting.
Maybe I've been very harsh.
Essex fans, mate.
I feel like every Essex fans, Essex.
If you want to write in and complain about Joe at the County Cricket on Twitter about that particular comment. But no, I understand your point, actually, Joe. I do. In terms of bowling in particular, he's the talisman. That is the point of this. He is the guy, he's the figurehead, the spearhead of their entire bowling unit. And if he was to get injured, for example, fair enough, then their hopes of Division 1 may curtail towards the last stage of the season. But Hugh, what do you make of Worcestershire then? Because they are an interesting side. They massively improved last year in the Bob Willis Trophy. They are a team which is resurging in Red Bull cricket. As we said there, they've got a fantastic opening combination. But again, what can they actually do to start winning games? Because this has been a problem now. They've drawn 5 and lost 1. They don't have many games left. They don't have a lot of time to find those winning combinations. What do they need to do? As Joe said, if Libby goes for England, what happens?
one, I don't think Libby will go to England. I don't think England are looking outside of their sort of Burns, Sibley, Crawley axis. I think that they'll be given the certainly the series against New Zealand
as well.
But they're not good with rest in the players who've been at the IPL. They're not going to go outside of their bubble. In effect, I think, you know, Libby's batted really, really well this year, but I think he's still a fair way from getting an England nod. I think James Bracey will get caught up before Jake Libby. I think Worcestershire's problem is the moment they've got a middle order who are out of nick. You know, Ricky Vessels is a fantastic batter. Brett De Oliveira is a fantastic batter in the middle order. You know, Tom Fell can be superb. You know, Ben Cox behind the stumps is a superb wicketkeeper batter. Then you look at the bowling, again, you've got a few players are out of nick. You know, Leach hasn't taken the wickets that you would normally expect of him at this point. Josh Tong's just come back from injury. You know, you mentioned his 7 wickets this week. I was really pleased to see him take those. Mm-hmm. And I watched a little bit on the live stream and he looked like he'd not lost any of his nip. I think that's really, you know, whenever you see a young fast bowler come back from a reasonable injury, you've always got that worrying that they, you know, they've going to lost a bit of pace or lost that ability to move the ball. From watching Josh Tong a little bit this week, you know, he looked the same bowler he looked previously. I think they've just got players who are just out of nick at the moment. You know, I don't think Worcester are a bad side. I've got, you know, I rate Worcester a lot. I you know, as a county, the Midlands. I think they've.
Oh, I need a new co-host. Best side in the Midlands. Same with Yorkshire in the North.
But I think they just need to find that nick. Whatever they need to do, you know, Ricky Vessels on his day can be one of the most destructive batters in county cricket. You know, if they choose to bring Ross Whiteley in, you know, I don't think anyone hits a cricket ball further than Ross Whiteley. Give him a go. They just need to find a way to get that middle order into nick and get their young fast bowler. You know, they've got Pat Brown. Get him, you know, give him a go in the red ball game rather than just saving him for white ball. They've got a really exciting crop of young fast bowlers. Let's give them a go. Let's see what they can do. I think it'd be interesting when Moeen Ali's available, depending on whether he gets selected for England, because he's, despite what a lot of people think, I think Moeen is a fantastic bowler. You know, he's just probably the best off spinner in county cricket at the moment. Let's, you know, get him back in that Worcestershire side. Let's get him bowling lots of overs. I think Worcester will benefit from that. And again, he bats at 3 and he scores runs for fun. Get Mo back. Get their young fast bowlers fit and get their middle order back in nick. And I think they'll be winning more games than they're drawing at the moment.
Interesting. Will be interesting to see if Moeen does come back into the Worcestershire fold. I mean, it would be a massive bonus. And he always scores runs against us as well, Moeen. So Worcestershire fans will be hoping for Moeen to return at some point for the championship. But yeah, it is interesting. And again, we just cannot differentiate the teams in Group 1 just yet. It's so, so close. Got plenty of games left. It is going to be an incredibly tight finish, almost a photo finish in Group 1. But I think we've covered Durham versus Worcestershire in a lot of detail there. So Hugh, I know that you're a little bit pressed for time. So we'll go on to your county next. Because Essex did beat Derbyshire by an innings and 15 runs in Chelmsford. Now, of course, we'll talk at length about Simon Harmer, but Hugh, because you are our resident Derbyshire fan, I wanted to touch upon the East Midlands County first, if I may, because it has been a very, very disappointing season for a side, which I mentioned Worcestershire looked resurgent last year in the Bob Willis Trophy. Derbyshire finished second in the North Group. They looked an incredibly complete side. They were up there challenging with the best in the North. So for you, Hugh, not just this week, of course, but encompassing the entire season as a whole so far, what do you think has gone wrong for Derbyshire? What exactly has not clicked with the East Midlands side this year?
I think last year what we did so well was everyone knew their role. Mm-hmm. You know, from 1 to 11, we played a very settled side. We rotated the seam bowlers a little bit, but the seam bowlers that came in, they knew their roles. You look at the batting lineup this year so far, even within the top 6, you know, we've played 6 games or 5 games. There's been changes throughout. You know, we've one enforced through injury to Billy Godleman, the captain. But, you know, Leis De Plooy, he's batted at 3, he's batted at 4. You know, what we don't seem to know what our best order is. We've brought Brooke Guest in, who we signed from Lancashire over the winter, and he played, you know, he batted down the order previously. He was batting at 8 or 9 a couple of weeks ago. He batted at 3 this week. it just seems a little bit muddled thinking at the moment. There's bags of potential in that side, you know. Got some really exciting young players. You've got, I mean, Lewis Rees, who again we signed from Lancashire 3 or 4 seasons ago, is a phenomenal all-rounder, but he just doesn't look quite right at the moment. He looks like he's struggling. I think he's potentially got, he's maybe carrying an injury, just doesn't look comfortable in his own skin. He's not got the same nip in his bowling. We've got a lot of players who just aren't quite firing. You know, we'll hold our hands up. We're a small county. We haven't got the budget that Warwickshire or Lancashire have got for players. We can't have a massive squad. And when you've not got a massive squad and players look a little bit out of nick, you've not got that ability to bring someone in who's going to you know, really change it around. Billy Stanley's come in as overseas. He didn't set the world alight, you know, against Essex. He was struggling with his run up when we were bowling on day whatever it was, when the rain abated and we actually got to play.
What do you think of that signing? Sorry to interrupt your flow, but what do you think of Billy Stanley?
He's not played very much red ball cricket. So
no. Sorry, that yeah, just to clarify, not in general, yeah. I was talking about in red ball cricket.
Yeah, I mean, what I like about the things I like about the Billy Stanley signing are he's here all season. So he becomes part of the team. And I think you think back to within recent times, the most successful, you know, overseas signings that Derbyshire have had, we had Martin Guptill, we had Usman Khawaja, where they shared a season. Where we've struggled is when we've had overseas, and I think this happens for a lot of counties, where they come in, chop and change, and they don't get into that sort of team community ethos. So the fact that Billy Stanley is going to be there all season, it is a really good thing. I think he will perform far better in white ball cricket. He's not played very much red ball cricket. So I think he's coming over here as an overseas player, almost learning his game in whites and with a red juke ball. So I think, let's be honest, he'll be cheap. You know, those financial considerations have to come in when you're talking about non-test match county grounds, that the smaller counties, you know, Derbyshire have one of the smallest memberships in the country, very committed and brilliant members, you know, but we've not got a vast amount of money. So we have to be really, really careful with our overseas signings. Our other overseas signing, Dustin Melton, was here as a coal pack last year. You know, he will qualify as a non-overseas next year through residency. And I think that overseas signing was looked at as maybe, you know, a move for the future when Dustin won't count as one of our overseas. So we've kept him on so that he doesn't go out of the country and play cricket and then have to do a longer sort of qualification period. So I think both very sensible, kind of financially astute signings. Is Billy Stanley going to do what other overseas players do and take 6-7 wickets for spit? Probably not. Is he going to get better as the season goes on? I'd hope so. Will we see full value for him in white ball cricket? Yeah, I think we will. Yeah. But he looked like a player who'd not bowled very much when he bowled on Thursday or Friday. And he'll be working harder than it. See, won't be happy. But I think we've got a lot of young bowlers. We over the winter we lost Ravi Rampal, we lost Tony Palladino. You know, hundreds of wickets gone out of a side. You know, Sam Connors is a really exciting young bowler. Mm-hmm. He will go far. He's quick and his control's getting more. George Scrimshaw has just come from Worcestershire, has come in. He's only played a couple of games. He's, you know, we're expecting a lot of young bowlers. And I think we're lacking in the bowling department that figurehead, that the Simon Harmer at Essex, the Oliver Hannan-Dolby at Warwickshire, the Chris Rushworth at Durham. We're lacking that person who, when the times are tough, Billy Godelman can throw the ball to and say, go and take me 3 or 4 quick wickets, you know, go and do that for me. That's what we're missing. We're missing those big game players. I think we do look out of nick at the moment, and we do look like we don't know what our best 11 is. We look like we don't know what our best order is, and I don't think that's helping with players knowing where they're you know what they're doing. You know, you look at the players who are doing well this year. You've got Matt Critchley and Harvey Hussain, who are playing really, really good cricket. You know, really good cricket. Matt Critchley's batted 6. Throughout the entire season, and he scored 512 runs. You know, he's averaging over 50. Harvey Hussain's batted seven every innings this season. He scored 330 runs and he's averaging 55. He loves a red ink at Harvey. You know, he accumulates the not outs. Those players who have had that solid batting position, they know their role in the side and they know what they're doing. You know, you look at, you know, wicket-wise, you know, Matt Critchley's leading wicket taker was 16. Who'd have thought a leg spinner would be our leading wicket taker come the, you know, 2 weeks into May? He's taken 16 wickets. He knows what he's doing. He knows his role. I mean, he's worked really, really hard. You know, leg spins are really difficult art, and the hours that Critch has put in is phenomenal. He works a lot with Stuart McGill in Australia. He's developed, and Stuart McGill thinks really, really highly of him. He thinks he should be, you know, not to put words in his mouth, but he thinks he should be getting England recognition. Critch is playing fantastically well, but again, because he knows his role, he comes on either first or second change. He knows what he's trying to do now. He's not got that sort of muddled mind. You know, the other bowler that's doing really well for us is Finn Hudson-Prentice, who came up from Sussex. Fantastic cricketer, not just a bowler, but a fantastic cricketer. He knows his role now. When he first came in, his first game for us, he scored 99 out batting at number three. He's now batting at, you know, eight. That's probably more like his natural position. Comes in lower down the order and can, you know, he can accumulate. I mean, last year when we beat Notts, he took us over the line with a fantastic, I forget what it was, 90-odd. We've got some superb cricketers. I just think that the thinking looks muddled, and I don't think that's helping with keeping our players in nick at the moment. Wayne Madsen, who, you know, county legend, he doesn't quite look right, but since the start of the season, he's batted at 3, 4, 5. You know, what are we doing? We had Alex Hughes came in this game, who is a middle-order batter and bowls a little bit of, you know, gentle swing. Probably our most underrated player, because he's a great batter, decent bowler, excellent in the field. In the first innings, he batted at 5. And I sat there looking at the scorecard thinking, well, is that where he was slated to come in? Or is he coming as a night watchman? In the second innings, he batted at 9. You know, if you're a batter, anyone who's played the game at any level knows, irrespective of how good a batter you are, if you're told you're going to come in at 11, it affects how you play the game. We need to have a more settled side, a more settled batting lineup. You know, Lewis Deploy is a phenomenal player. He times a ball as sweet as you'll see. But he looks better at 4 than he does at 3. When he batted at 3 earlier in the season, he didn't look right. He's batted at 4 and he started to look better again. Yeah, we've got to have a more sort of clear thought process when it comes to our side.
Absolutely. It is integral to the success of any team. No matter what sport, but in particular cricket, it's clarity of your role. In particular, in county cricket, where it's over the course of 4 days as well, you have to keep up that focus. You have to keep up that energy, that pressure as well over the course of those 4 days. It's so important to know your niche within the side. Look at England, for example, in white ball cricket. Every single one of those guys from 1 to 11 knows exactly what is expected of them. So, Hugh, I agree with that. I think that is definitely something that does need to work. That does need to be worked on in Derbyshire. It really does, not just this season, of course, but heading into the foreseeable future as well. And I know, Hugh, you are a bit tight for time, but I just have one more question for you before you do exit today's podcast. And that is with regards to Derbyshire's season turning around. Do you think that they can salvage their fortunes? And also, do you have any players in the second 11, for example, or even guys on the fringes who you think could come into the lineup and maybe galvanise and reinvigorate this team?
I think you look at Group 1 of the County Championship this year, the fact that it's so close, if we win 3 and draw 2 of our next 5 games, we could finish in the top 2 quite comfortably. You know, we're on 41. What's the top team on? 70, 80? It's not a million miles away. So, yes, I think we can turn the season round. Whenever Derbyshire have done well, we've always done well with when we've had momentum on our side. So, you know, thinking back to 2012, a really good start. We kept going. We ended up winning Division 2. Last year, we beat Nottinghamshire. We kept going and we kept going. And it was only that very last game against Lancashire where we messed up and we didn't qualify, which was, you know, gutting. Because I think we deserve to, you know, as much as, you know, Essex and Somerset won their divisions as well. You look at the change around for Derbyshire to do that. And I think it would have been great to see a county like Derbyshire, not got the hugest following, you know, unfashionable county, to play a Lord's final against one of those sort of perennial achievers. I know Somerset don't win, but they come second a lot. You know, it would have been great even for Derbyshire to come second and showcase the potential, the players that they've got. It would have been wonderful to see. Yes, we can. I think from talking to some of the guys, it suddenly feels a lot more settled. You know, Billy Godwin coming back in after his injury has helped. I think Brooke Guest, after his performances this week, will have now nailed. I think he will bat at three for the rest of the summer, and I think that'll be really good. I mean, we signed him as a wicket keeper, but Harvey Hussain's keeping has improved no end this year. Well, not this year, but just over the last few years, Harvey's come on leaps and bounds. So I don't see Brooke Guest taking the gloves off him, certainly in red ball cricket. So I think, you know, if Lewis Rees continues to open, if he's not injured, we've got, you go Billy Godelman at one, Lewis Rees at two, Brooke Guest at three, Lace Deploy at four, Wayne Madsen at five, Matt Critchley at six, Harvey Hussain at seven. That for me is a strong enough batting lineup in county championship cricket. You put Finn Hudson-Prentice in at eight, which for me, you know, he's excellent. You know, someone who was on the Sussex Academy with him when I interviewed him for my podcast, he reckoned that Finn was probably the most natural cricketer that he's ever played with. You know, this is the guy who knows what he's talking about, to say that about someone who's come up to us. And Finn is a fantastic player. You know, he's put on a yard of pace this over the winter as well. A genuine number eight batter. You know, you've got someone batting at number eight who can score, who's got a high score of 99. You know, it's not to be sniffed at. Sam Connors for me has to play. I think, you know, he's too exciting. Billy Stanlake's always going to play. And then it's that sort of number 11 or wherever. But we've got enough exciting bowlers. We've got a left armer called Mikey Cohen, who bowled rapid. You know, he's really, really quick. You know, we've got George Scrimshaw, who signed from Worcestershire, who is a decent, you know, really good bowler. You ask about those players in and around who could come in. There's a young lad called Niels Priestley who really impresses me in the twos. He's a phenomenal cricketer. He will break into the first team at some point this season. He is a really, really good cricketer. I'd love to see him do well. And then we've got Ben Aitchison as well, who came in last summer, who a lot of counties were sniffing around, and, you know, well, fair play to Derbyshire. They struck early and got him on a contract. And he just keeps getting better and better as well. He's not the quickest, but he has lovely shape with his bowling. You know, he pitches it up, he moves it away, and he gets a lot of wickets sort of caught behind the stump. So, you know, I think he's taken nine this year already he's not played every game, so maybe three or four games he's played. We just need, a bit like I was talking about with Worcestershire, we just need some people to click into form. And then I think we can be a match for anyone on a day. But I think that's the issue with, you know, a county of the size of Derbyshire, who haven't got a huge squad. When it's not our day, we get rolled over like we did at Essex with, you know, I mean, you know, Simon Harm's a freak. You know, I don't think there's been a better either Colpack or overseas signing in the last decade than Simon Harmer.
Ever?
G-Tan.
Gene Patel is superb. But I mean, it's difficult to say ever, isn't it? Because it's hard to compare, because you go back and you think, again, you two young pups and whippersnappers.
I could say Lara.
You know, Brian Lara, you know, you go back a little bit further and you've got Courtney Walsh, Curtly Ambrose, Malcolm Marshall,
Viv
Richards at Glamorgan and at Somerset. You know, it's hard to say ever, but I think in the last 10 years, I mean, when you consider Simon Harmer, since he's signed for Essex, he's taken, I forget how many five wickets hauls. It's something silly like 20 odd.
I think what's most remarkable about Harmer is, as well, is his lack of international recognition. He's played five tests.
You've got to remember, though, Joe, that, I mean, Harmer came over as a cold pack. So
no, 100%.
Yeah. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see now, with the change in rulings over Brexit, whether South Africa will come call him. You know,
they'd be stupid not to, well, to be honest.
Indeed. But, you know, going back, he's taken something ridiculous like 25 five-wicket hauls since he signed for Essex. At Chelmsford, no other spinner has taken a five-wicket haul in that time.
Apart from Jeetan. Jeetan is the only other one.
Oh, is he the only one?
Yeah, that's...
I don't think Parky's played there.
Oh, very funny. But, well, in fact, to be honest, look, we have a laugh and a joke about Matt Parkinson. I rate him very highly. I really, really do. Matt Parkinson... That's up for debate, of course, Joe. We'll have to touch upon that in another podcast. But Matt Parkinson is a fantastic talent who's had a brilliant start to life in Red Bull cricket, but Simon Harmer is just an absolute...
Harmer is a
freak of nature, let's face it. He really is. Every single time. This is the most crazy stat as well. He has gone wicketless twice in fourth innings in county cricket. Twice. One of those was, I think, 2018, and he bowled four balls. And the other one was this year against Warwickshire with Rob Yates, Vihari. He just picks up wickets for fun. He makes county cricket look almost amateurish. It's scary how good Simon Harmer is.
It is crazy that South Africa have never, even before he became a Kolpak, South Africa never kind of took the option. And maybe he wasn't as good in South Africa. I've never seen him play domestically in South Africa.
His domestic stats in South Africa don't compete with Maharaj or Linda.
But on the face of it now, you know, he's taken 680 first-class wickets and he's a spinner playing in England for the last few years. He took 80 in 2019?
83 wickets, yeah.
On a postage stamp at Chelmsford, let's be honest, it's not like he's playing at Lords or the Oval where he's going to get people top edging.
Yeah. You know, or a really like spin-inducive ground.
Yeah,
like
he's not at Taunton. Yeah. You know, he's playing on a very small ground on, you know, pitches which you look at Essex's other bowlers, you know, Porter, Sam Cook, you know, Matt Quinn, who's just gone out on loan. It's not like they are producing spin-friendly pitches for him. The pitch that he took 9 for on against Derbyshire in the first innings of the day, it wasn't Raglan Square.
Imagine if he did produce a spin-friendly wicket.
I'm not sure if he'd be as effective. I know that sounds silly, but I think if it turned more... I think because he gets, I mean, Simon Harmer's hands, he could virtually wrap around my head, and I've got a big head. You know, he literally could crush my skull. He gets that many revs on the ball. I think if it was spinning too much, it negates a lot.
It
wouldn't be as effective. But I think as well, what's really important is he knows his game. He knows the fields he's going to set. You look at the fields that he sets the same fields all the time and he bowls to it. Think of what a lot of young spinners don't do very well. And this is where I think Parkinson's improved. He's learned what field to set to bowl to. Mm. You know, that you look at the difference between Jack Leach and Don Bess. Jack Leach sets a field and bowls to it. Don Bess doesn't have the repetition in his action to be able to bowl to a field yet. And that's why he doesn't do as well. Yes, and that's where Critch has got a lot better. He's got couple of seasons, he's got that control. And you're a leg spinner, you're always going to bowl, unless you're Shane Warne or Stuart McGill, you're always going to get that bad one because it's probably the hardest bowling discipline in cricket. But the control that I think the young leg spinners are showing now in the game, the likes of Parkinson, Critchley, you know, you look at Adil Rashid, he's not young, but the control that he has. But you look at, again, why does Adil Rashid bowl so much better in white ball cricket than he does in red ball cricket? Because he's got a captain, and this is no disrespect to Joe Root, but he's got a captain in Owen Morgan that knows what fields to set for him.
Yeah.
Whereas in Test match cricket, Joe Root never quite looks like he knows where to put his fields for Rashid. That's why I think it's so important as a young spinner, you learn that so that when you go, and it must be really hard, mustn't it, to go into Test match cricket to your Test match captain on your debut and go, no, that's not the field I want. I want this, this, and this. But you look at the players who know their own fields, and that's why they're more successful. And I think that's why Parkinson will break into the team because he now knows what he's doing, just like Simon Harmer does.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, Hugh, I know you have to go now, don't you? Because you're a bit tight for time. Sadly. But I'll tell you what, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure talking all things county cricket, Derbyshire as well. Always, always welcome back here on the County Cricket Podcast.
Thank you very much, Hugh.
Hugh, before really we do say our goodbyes, just anything to plug or promote, social media channels. I mean, your podcast, for example.
My podcast, the Back to the Pavilion podcast, where I talk to former cricketers about their life, careers, experiences since hanging up the boots. I think, you know, we always hear a lot about what it takes to become a professional sportsman, but we never hear what it takes after that. I've been going for just over a year now. Some fantastic interviews with the likes of David Gower, Jack Russell, Rob Key, and then some players who played just a handful of first-class games as well. So, you know, Charlie Hartley, who played for Kent.
Sheikh Chowdhury. I'll listen to that one.
Yeah, Sheikh Chowdhury, who, you know, he ex-Bear, ex-Pair, coming out to This week is Wes Durston, who comes out. I'm not sure when this will go out, but 6 o'clock. But this 6 o'clock on Monday, Wes Durston's out. But Joe, one for you coming up soon, probably before your time. But Joe Scuderi, who used to play for Lancashire, he'll be coming out soon. But yeah, you know, if you search for Back to the Pavilion on Twitter, you'll find it there. But yeah, I find it really interesting to talk to people who've had to make that transition out of the game. But thank you very much for having me, guys. I really enjoyed it.
Well, that is what we like to hear, Hugh. And of course,
yeah,
guys,
thank you very much,
all the listeners out there, do go and give you a follow. Give the podcast a listen. Well worth it. But I suppose, Joe, we have to chew the fat now about the rest of Group 1 and, of course, Group 2. But, Joe, was it last week or the week before you mentioned on the podcast about Essex?
And it was last week.
Was it last week that you mentioned about them potentially not being quite their imperious best this season? Do you think after an incredibly complete performance like this one this week against Derbyshire, with the likes of Simon Harmer producing the goods, Jamie Porter as well, always nice to see him in the wickets with figures of 3 for 41. Then you had that absolutely extraordinary knock, courtesy of Dan Lawrence, a ridiculously good 152 out from 133 balls. Do you think that if Essex can continue this upwards trend, if they can continue to develop this momentum, this impetus, heading into their final four games, do you think that they could win the county championship again? Or do you still maintain that outlook or that stance that this Essex side are not strong enough this season? What are your thoughts on that, mate?
I guess in short, I still don't think Essex have... I still don't think Essex have proven themselves, because for me personally, Essex still need to win a few more games. You know, you can go through every group and point out teams who have won two games and you wouldn't say you're going to win the county championship. You know, you look at a side like Lancs, who have had two very tough draws because of the rain and three exceptional wins. A side like Gloucester, who have had four exceptional wins and one potentially lucky draw, but at the end of the day, they drew. So, you know, you'd have to say, and Somerset as well, you have to say those three sides are probably the best three in the country at the moment in Red Bull cricket. Essex need to beat a top side. Hugh's obviously just spoken about Derbyshire. I'm not going to kind of repeat anything he just said. But in short, I will say Derbyshire right now are in the bottom three sides in the country. So to beat Derbyshire is easier than it would be if, let's say, Yorkshire go and beat Lancs next week, which, fingers crossed, it doesn't happen. I also don't think it will. But let's hypothetically use that as an example. If Yorkshire were to go and beat Lancs next week, then you would have to say Yorkshire, I said at the start, Yorkshire and Lancs, in my opinion, will get through. I don't think that would change. But you would have to say Yorkshire are certainly going to be up there as favourite, or maybe not as favourites, but up there.
Contenders.
Contenders. That's the word I'm looking for. They've beaten one of the best sides in the country. And I don't think anyone's going to argue that. Lancs, Gloucester, two best sides in the country at the moment in Red Bull cricket. So, look, as I say, I think it's all good beating Derbyshire by an innings and 15 runs is a great win. There were some great performances. Dan Lawrence, by the way, do that for England, please, because that was ideal.
Well, what did you want to say about Dan Lawrence's innings? Because you mentioned this before the podcast recording, and in particular, the way in which he brought up his 150 against Matt Critchley. It was a devastating salvo of fours and sixes. It really was.
Yeah,
but definitely. Do you remember how he actually brought the 150? It was one which was well outside off, and he almost dolphin dived forward and hit it straight. It was ridiculous. He ended up on the floor.
I think when someone's doing that, you know they're in good form. A, you know they're a good player.
Incredible,
because you wouldn't get your average county cricketer doing that. And also, as I say, you can tell that they're in good form if they're doing something like that. So, look, I think Dan Lawrence, I just said it then actually, hopefully he does that for England. Please do that for England against New Zealand. Imagine, obviously New Zealand are for a better attack than Derbyshire. That's a fact. One's an international team, the other is a first-class team. But imagine a performance along those lines against the likes of Bolt and Neil Wagner
and
Jameson and de Grandhomme. And I don't know if they'll play a spinner, but if so, maybe Santner, someone like that. It would be incredible. So he's not going to bat four for England, obviously, because that's where Root bats. But I could easily see him slotting in at number five with Ollie Pope at six. And I think that middle order has got runs. Root's got 200s this year. Lawrence has got 100 in this game. I think, yeah, he's only got 100, hasn't he? And Pope, I think, has got two, including a double 100. So that middle order has got runs. They're in good form. Say what you want about who's going to open and who's in a back three and who's going to keep and all that.
Well, it's going to apparently Folks.
As I was about to say, personally, I wouldn't have give the gloves to Butler at all. I would give it to Folks. You know, say what you want about all that. But I think 4-5-6, sorry. I think that kind of picks itself. And it's great to see from an England perspective. And I'm sure you all agree. All the listeners will agree. That's a great thing. You know, we all debate about counties and kind of have what's rivalries, isn't it, effectively, within county cricket. But when we talk about England, we're also fighting the same team.
Yeah.
So, well, at least me and you are. Obviously, we have listeners all around the world, which is great. I mean, yeah, that's one of the a good thing about that. I like talking about England on this podcast. So, yeah, as I say, Dan Lawrence, phenomenal innings. Great to see. And the way he did, what was it, 6-6-6-4 it went, didn't it?
Oh, ridiculous.
He's 150, remarkable. I think he went from 100 to 150 in 20 balls. So, yeah, that remarkable innings and great to see him finding form. What, 2 weeks away from the first test? So,
yeah, not bad timing at all for Dan Lawrence. And as you rightfully said, Joe, of course, not all of our listeners are from England. We have listeners in India, Eswatini, for example, Australia, New Zealand. In particular, if you are from New Zealand, you may not be supporting the Three Lions and a Crown in this next series. But for us as England fans and county cricket fans to have this level of competition, this level of depth within county cricket right now, is fantastic. It really is. And I know we have a lot of debates and opinionated arguments and this, that, the other. But just to have that level of depth in county cricket right now is fantastic. So yeah, the signs are looking very, very bright for England. Dan Lawrence, what a talent. What an incredible talent. I feel like the India series didn't really show him off in the greatest of lights. He is still a very young player. Of course it is.
Second against, international tour.
Against magnificent spinners.
To get runs against those kind of bowlers.
Yeah, against Ashwin and Akshar Patel.
And the fact that some of their seamers weren't even playing was remarkable. So yeah, I think Dan Lawrence, as I say,
great
players talent. Players will always do better in England as well. That's just a fact. You know, players will always do better in their home conditions, unless they're obviously if you're a top player, of course. So yeah, it's going to be great to see, you know, how they kind of go about it.
100%. And we have got some great, great young talent. And that is why you should be watching the County Championship in 2021. Get to see these guys week in, week out. And you get to see their development as well. And I think that's the beauty of county cricket as well, isn't it? Watching the progression of these young cricketers. You mentioned Parkinson, for example. Mahmood's another one. A guy like Pat Brown a couple of years ago for Worcestershire. A guy like Dan Lawrence now, Ollie Pope. We are very, very privileged right now in England to have a lot of young talent. And yeah, should be interesting. That New Zealand series indeed. But moving on from Group 1 then, Joe, let's go on to Group 2. Now, unfortunately, not loads of cricket being played in Group 2 this week. There were only two games, and one of those between Somerset and Surrey was basically a washout. But let's start at the home of cricket, Joe, where Hampshire beat Middlesex by 7 wickets within 3 days at Lord's. And I wanted to talk about one person in particular, Joe, and that is Keith Hubert Douglas Barker. What a cricketer. What a magnificent cricketer. Again, doesn't really get enough cricket, I don't think, outside of the county cricket umbrella. But his batting performance this week, it was a magnificent 84. It really was. Hampshire were 99 runs behind. They're on 73 for 6 when he walked to the crease. And I say walked, he strode. He looked so confident, so assured in his game, as Keith Barker always does. But they ended up from 73 for 6 to getting a 36-run lead. That is absolutely huge in the context of this game. And then what followed it, sorry, with the likes of Abbas and Abbott and Brad Wheel, for example, and Barker himself picked up a wicket in that second innings. What did you make of Keith Barker's performance this week, Joe? Just how integral of a performance was that from the Hampshire all-rounder? And yes, if I can call him an all-rounder. He has 5,000.
I was just going to agree with you then that he is an all-rounder.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think obviously at the start of the season, we kind of mentioned how well Hampshire seemed to be doing. In the very first game, you know, James Vince got all them runs. Dawson, I think, got runs, didn't he? Allsop got runs. So they've really struggled since. I know Vince got 60-odd in this game, but even so, for a player like James Vince, who's, you know, had international recognition, is good, but it could be better, you know. I mean, everyone can always get better. But just in the context of the season, Vince hasn't really got many runs since the first game. So, yeah, I think, you know, Barker kind of saved Hampshire there, didn't he? Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really good attack, to be honest. Barker, Abbott, Abbas, Wheel. Obviously no spinner. Well, I mean, Dawson, but no frontline spinner. So I feel a bit sorry for Mason Crane. I feel like he's been stitched up, not obviously on purpose. The Hampshire, obviously, coaching staff haven't done this on purpose, but he's not going to get a chance to play for England in a test against New Zealand unless there was a lot of injuries. So he was obviously, I thought he was a shout to maybe play in India because he did really bowl really well in the Bob Willis Trophy last year. But obviously, he's not been playing the last few weeks. So I do feel a bit sorry for Mason Crane. As I said, they've not done that on purpose. That's just the team that they felt is best. But yeah, I mean, as I say, Keith Barker, I mean, you will have more superlatives to say about him. I don't really know what else to say. He just batted very well. You know, seemed to bowl quite well as well. You know, taking one wicket in the second inning. So, as I say, I mean, you'll have more superlatives. I just think he's a good player. I don't really know what else to say about him. I just, fair play to him. Well done.
Well, you know me, Joe. I rate Keith Barker incredibly highly. Did you also see the little bit of mischief he did on the field as well, which was quite funny?
I did not, but go on. I would like to know what it is.
I can't remember who the batsman was. One of the Middlesex batsmen. I actually watched this on the live stream. Fell over right at the other end. And Keith Barker extended his hand to like help him up. And then at the last second, he withdrew it. So, yeah, again, though, he just looked like a man on a mission this week. He really did with the bat and the ball. I mentioned that about his batting. I remember he always used to come in and save Warwickshire when we needed him, in particular, you know, in those golden era between 2012 and 2016. Such a consistent performer. Great bloke as well. Really, really good bloke. I know we just said there about him pulling a bit of a prank, but no, he genuinely is such a solid, reliable performer with both the bat and the ball in hand. And he had a great game this week. And I'm really, really happy for him. It pains me as a Warwickshire fan because he was so popular here at Fortress Edgbaston and always will be.
Why did he leave?
Well, we just had too many seamers.
But do you not think that... I mean, how old is he?
I wouldn't have got rid of him. That's all I'm saying. I would not have got rid of him at all. I would have kept him, but him, Wrighty, unfortunately left at the end of the season in 2018 when we got promoted. But Hampshire fans enjoy him. Enjoy him because he is an absolute pleasure to watch in red ball cricket. Also, potentially could play a little bit of white ball. Could potentially play a little bit of white ball under the new acronym or the new naming, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I actually did see that about the T20 cricket. I must say, actually, I'm a fan of... I wish every county had like a name, obviously, with Lancaster Lightning, your Birmingham Bears.
Warwickshire Bears.
You know, obviously got the Sussex Sharks. I wish every county had a name. That should really be the rule, certainly in T20 cricket, in my opinion. But yeah, I did see a few Hampshire fans a bit discontent with the name because I think they believe that they should have been called Hampshire Hogs, which I looked up, actually. I don't know if you've ever seen this. I don't know if you've looked it up as well. But it turns out that there is a bit of a connection between Hampshire and hogs, which obviously is like a kind of a pig. So, I mean, Hampshire fans, maybe you can enlighten us a little bit more about that on Twitter because, I did see a bit of annoyance from some Hampshire fans that they weren't called the Hogs, but maybe the Hawks is a bit more of a fearsome T20 name than a hog. So, maybe it's something to do with that.
Potentially, yeah. But yeah, I mean, T20 Blast as well, pretty much round the corner in a few weeks, isn't it? Starts on the 10th of June for us up at Emerald Headingley. But going back onto the county championship, Joe, another Hampshire bowler who I really just wanted to mention was Carl Abbott. Again, we mentioned about the dominance of Simon Harmer. I remember in 2019, Carl Abbott tearing through Somerset, taking 17 wickets down at the Aegeus Bowl. And this week, again, he just looked at his imperious best, match figures of 11 for 85 from 28 overs. And I'll tell you what, some of the bowling was absolutely exceptional. It really was short, sharp bouncers, and then it was combined so eclectically with some beautiful inswingers and some majestically executed outswingers as well. He was just brilliant this week, Carl Abbott, as was Mohammed Abbas as well. He took figures of 6 for 70 from his 31 overs in this match. They are an incredibly, incredibly intimidating bowling unit. I don't think anyone can actually disagree with that at all. They put Middlesex to the sword. And they're just an incredibly impressive bowling unit. The only thing that I will say, the batting does need to increase. You can't keep on relying on James Vince and you can't keep on relying on Keith Barker to kind of save the team in these situations. But I'll tell you what, if the batting can come to the forefront a bit, that is a county championship potential winning bowling lineup. It really is. You've got a Bass and Abbott, two international quality bowlers, Keith Barker, who's a county cricket stalwart, Brad Wheel, who again, I think goes ridiculously under the radar. I put him in the same category as a Josh Davey. Maybe not to the exact same extent of Davey in terms of being a prolific wicket taker, but just a guy who you can rely on, always seems to just go under the radar, but continuously picks up wickets at key moments. And then, of course, you've got Liam Dawson as well to add in that control. So if Hampshire's batting can come to the forefront, I think they are one to watch this season. I really do. And this win as well, in the context of Group 2, was massive. Absolutely massive. That cannot be over-exaggerated at all, because Somerset and Surrey was a draw. So not only have Hampshire now got that little bit of breathing room from Surrey, it's now a 14-point gap, I believe. They've also closed the gap to Somerset and Gloucestershire quite handsomely. So that is a huge, huge win for Hampshire. Keeps those Division 1 dreams well and truly alive. And as I said, we've got a very, very interesting and intriguing end to Group 2, the run-in, as we'll call it here on the County Cricket Podcast. But Joe, on the flip side of that, of course, Hampshire have been fantastic this season. They really have. Yes, they've had a couple of poor games in the middle, but overall they have had a pretty impressive campaign so far in the group of death. On the other hand, though, you've got Middlesex. And I don't know exactly what is going on at Middlesex at the moment, but this just does not look like a settled team at all. I'm going to be honest. And I watched Peter Hanscom's interview the other day, and he just looks broken. I really don't like watching Peter Hanscom like that at all. He's usually quite a chirpy, energetic kind of character. He just looks almost lost at the moment. He can't find a run. I mean, he scored 20-odd in this game and did look very, very good until he got bowled by an absolute jaffer. Yeah, he looked very good. The boundaries were coming at a decent rate. But the problem is, he's just not scoring consistent runs. And when you are the captain of Middlesex, a team which, let's face it, has been on the slide since 2016, the incredible county championship win, you are the captain of arguably one of the biggest sides in the country in terms of test venue. You are captain of the side that plays at the home of cricket itself. And it's a team that's struggling to find any kind of rhythm with the bat. I really, really feel for Peter Hanscom. I really do. He's been dropped in very much so at the deep end. And unfortunately, at the moment, he's just struggling. So I wish Peter Hanscom the best of luck. I really, really do in terms of captaincy and batting. But Joe, do you think that's Division 1 and 2 hopes over for Middlesex now? They've got four 100%. Games left. You've got four incredibly competitive sides above them. Do you think that's their dreams over?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we mentioned last week, I think it might be me specifically who said it, about how they basically need to rotate their side. Interestingly enough, they're actually playing Lancs right now in the second 11. And they've actually got Max Holden playing, who obviously struggled for runs this season. So he's been now been dropped to the second 11. Stephen Eskenazi is also playing for the second 11. Luke Holman is playing for the second 11. Nathan Souter is playing for the second 11. And this is the one that really kind of interests me the most, or like surprises me the most, I should say, is that Stephen Finn is playing for the second 11. Now, you know, you've got a guy like Stephen Finn who maybe he's had injury problems this year, I'm not sure. But you've got a guy like Stephen Finn who is, well, I mean, when was the last time he played Test cricket? As recently as 2016, I want to say. He played Edgbaston and he got a 5 for Edgbaston. So, you know, when you've got a guy like Stephen Finn who is of international quality, that's a fact. He's a very experienced player. I think he's their T20 captain. I'm not sure if he's still, but he certainly was very recently. So it just surprises me that some lot I've named, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players there who can play who have played first team cricket. And Cracknell as well has played first team cricket, I think. So that's another player. And also Michael Atherton's son is playing second 11 as well. So there's so many quality players there. He's got 100 against Yorkshire this year for a uni side. So their second 11 is filled with quality players. There are definitely, you know, kind of positions to fill in this first team, in my opinion, for Middlesex. So it will be very interesting to see kind of how they shape up in the next few weeks. You know, as you said, Aaron, they kind of, are they going to make Division 1? Almost certainly not. Are they going to make Division 2? Probably not. They still could, but probably not, in my opinion. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they kind of go about things in the next few weeks.
Well, this is the thing, Joe. Like, do you think that any of those guys could change Middlesex's fortunes around? Let's discount Eskenazi for the time being because, as I said, he's looking for a loan at the moment due to a lack of opportunities in that top order. But you mentioned there about Max Holden. Now, again, he hasn't really been in the greatest of forms this season. Again, a really unfortunate timing for him, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. You know, they obviously brought...
Jack Davis. Can Jack I just Davis say, he side. Looked very, very good. Jack Davis looked very, very good. If I'm Middlesex right now, I think they're sticking with him for the rest of the season. He looked very, very impressive. Some of the drives he's producing were fantastic.
To me, though, you can't leave Max Holden out of the side for long. You know, I understand that, you know, Davis is a good player, but I've never thought Max Holden's an opener. I've always thought Max Holden's a number three. Certainly in white ball cricket, I think he's an opener, but maybe not so much in other forms. Nick Govins is playing very well at the moment. He's probably been their best player this season. Do you really want to move him back up the order? I don't know. At the end of the day, you know, I've just reeled off about six or seven names at least, all of who could... I mean, you say Eskenazi can't get in the team, but even so, he could hypothetically play. He's of that standard. He's of county standard.
Yeah, but where would you play him? That's the thing.
At the end of the day...
Unless you're going to drop Hanscom as captain. But are you going to drop your overseas?
Well, it's been done before. At the end of the day, if you're overseas and getting runs, why does he deserve to play? He's no different to anyone else. That's the way I view it. You know? Like, to me... you know, if you brought in, I don't know, so a test quality batsman and he goes and gets 10 ducks in a row, why does he deserve to play over someone else? Because at the end of the day, he still plays for the team. He's just from a different country. So to me, that doesn't make sense. Like, you know, people don't drop their overseas. I never get that. So another person for me is Josh DeCares, who, as you say, is Atherton's son, Michael Atherton's son. And he got 100 against Yorkshire. I think for, I don't know what uni it was, but it was for a uni side. So he got 100 against Yorkshire for a uni side, as I say, in a pre-season friendly. Why not give him a game? Because at the end of the day, if he's even half as good as his dad, then, you know, he's going to
be some cricketer.
Yeah, he's going to get a lot of runs. So why not put him in the side? Because at the end of the day, the worst that will happen is you keep losing. To me, it doesn't make sense that you wouldn't. So, yeah, food for thought maybe for Middlesex fans there.
I'll tell you what, though, I feel for Middlesex fans. I really, really do. Because, again, this slip just doesn't seem to be ending for the time being. They're just not finding any rhythm, any momentum. You think they beat Surrey, didn't they, a couple of rounds ago, and suddenly that spark's just gone again. So, in terms of players that they can bring in to kind of revitalise and re-energise the side... As I said, Jack Davis, I think, will retain his place for the rest of the season. Now, he was incredibly impressive. But the problem with Middlesex so far... No, but Holden's class as well. Look, I like Max Holden as well, Joe. I think he's a wonderful, wonderful cricketer. But when it comes to Middlesex right now, the batting is the crux. It's the Achilles heel. Because you look at the bowling, you've got Murta, Ethan Bamber as well. I know what's been a pretty disappointing season for the Saxes. I think he has come on leaps and bounds. He's a very, very impressive young seamer. Still, what is he, 22 or 23 years of age? That looks as though he's got something about him. You got guys like Stephen Finn. I know Roland Jones is injured, but could potentially come back later on in the season. You got Tilanwa Lalawita, Luke Holman, for example. You've got a fantastic bowling attack here, James Harris as well. But the problem is the batting. And if we look at the batting averages this season, unfortunately for Middlesex, it's just not been substantial enough at all. And even in this game, Nick Gubbins is the only player in two innings who's scoring over 50 runs. And Joe, I wanted to ask you and the listeners this, really. How many Middlesex players have scored a century this season?
I would say one.
Yeah.
Nick Gubbins.
It was Sam Robson.
It was Sam Robson. Well, there you go. So even Sam Robson, who's got 100, he's not really in good form. He got 20 and 5 in this game. I know it's only one game, but just in general, he's not been in good form. So as I say, Nick Gubbins has been their most consistent batsman. I would assume he's got, if not the most, the second most runs for Middlesex this year.
He's actually got third.
The third. So who's above him? Robbie White?
So you got Sam Robson at the moment. He's on 386. But this is the key thing again. Look at the averages. So Sam Robson, 386 runs at 35.09. You got Robbie White, who has been excellent, actually. I think Robbie White this season has really stepped up to the mark for Middlesex in the middle order. He scored 351 runs at 35.1. And then you got Nip Gubbins in third on 330 runs, an average of 30. Now, the interesting thing here as well, I just wanted to show you the drop-off here, Joe. So it goes from 35.1, 35.09, 30 to 20.5 with Roland Jones, 19.75 with Eskenazi. John Simpson as well, unfortunately, just hasn't had a great season so far, but has been excellent with the gloves. I can't fault his glove work, but 16.18 with the bat. And Holden as well, averaging 14.77. Where do the runs come from? This is the problem in Middlesex. They need that kickstarter. Jack Davis could be that. He could be the spark which reignites that batting lineup. But for the time being, I mean, they're just struggling.
Yeah, they are. And you mentioned there, like, obviously how the averages drop off. The fact that Roland Jones is the next drop off says a lot about the team to me.
Yeah, batting well down the order.
Exactly. I mean, Roland Jones, he can bat, but you don't want him, Roland Jones, scoring your runs. So,
and even that's only a 20.5 average.
Exactly. So, you know, they're what was it, a previous one? 30 or 30, yeah. I think. So, that's 10 runs where, you know, people, well, that's a bracket of 10 runs that people on average don't score. That's quite worrying for Middlesex fans. So, yeah, I would be worried. Also, it is quite ironic, I think, that Eskenazi is fifth on that list and is actually looking to leave the club on loan. I find that very... Personally, I think he should be the captain, the club captain. I don't know why. I'm not a fan of overseas players being club captain unless it's someone like Dane Vilas, for example, or Jeetan Patel, who've been at the club for a long, long time. Obviously, Patel was at Warwickshire for even longer than Vilas, but I'm just not a fan of overseas players being captain.
No, that's the thing. It's a shame. Because I personally like Middlesex. I think Middlesex are a great county and they've had it rough in the past few years. But I just don't see where they go from this unless the batting can improve. I feel like Division 1's completely gone. Division 2, potentially, who knows? But again, you've got Surrey and the Derby. I think that's going to be a massive game. Don't drop the heads entirely, Middlesex fans. But for the time being, yeah, they desperately need... They just need a catalyst or a spark, a big innings, a big century. They need someone else to really step up to the mark with the bat. And until that happens, unfortunately, they are going to be in the bottom two places in Group 2. But that's enough about Middlesex and Hampshire then, Joe. Now, this is where we usually say, let's move on to the next game in the group. Unfortunately, Somerset and Surrey didn't really play much cricket.
Yeah, wasn't the best game, was it?
Well, it's not even a case of that. There wasn't really a game. There were 68 overs of play, unfortunately, in this particular game. While there was some cricket being played, let's just read out the best scores of the week. I mean, most of the live stream this week was basically just Puddles in Taunton. And fair play, can I just mention, I know we're going to say about the rain and this, that, the other, but the ground staff at Taunton worked their absolute socks off. Because Taunton, at the end of day two, looked like an absolute lake. And they got it from looking like a lake in the middle of Somerset to looking just like, you know, bit puddles here and there. It was an incredible effort from the ground staff. So fair play to the Somerset ground staff this week. But in terms of the game itself, not really loads to write home about, unfortunately. Rory Burns, I mean, it's nice to see him back in the runs, isn't it, Joe? I know you're a big fan of Rory as an opening batsman. He scored 55 from 104 balls before chopping one on from Marchant de Lange. Ollie Pope as well scored 33. Jamie Smith, he continues to impress me. I like Jamie Smith. He's coming on leaps and bounds this season. He's got 27 out from 58. And then in terms of from a Somerset perspective, I mean, in a way, Somerset fans may actually not mind the timing of this because Jack Leach was rested due to the rotation policy. Stephen Davis was out with an injury. I believe he'll be back for the next round of games, but this week he is out with a minor injury, which has had some surgery now. And then Craig Overton was also rested. Maybe not the worst timing for Somerset, you know, keep those guys fresh, fit, and you haven't really missed a game with them. But in terms of Somerset's bowlers this week, Lewis Gregory, by far the standout, 2 for 64 from 22 overs. But there wasn't really a lot of cricket. Now, it's a bit of a shame because we actually touted that as the game to watch. I was really, really looking forward to that because of the implications. However, although the game itself didn't have much action, again, that draw is massive in the wider context of Group 2. It's humongous. If Hampshire would have lost or drawn at Lords, for example, maybe this wouldn't be as big of a deal. But that has now opened up Pandora's box in Group 2. There are now possibilities for Hampshire to finish in the top two again, even potentially Surrey, because Surrey again have two massive home games coming up against Middlesex and Gloucestershire. If they win those or win and draw one, they're up there. They are in the dogfight. So this has blown Group 2 completely open for those four teams. And yeah. Joe, I suppose now we'll start with Surrey because we all know about the international summer and we know that they're going to be losing Pope, Burns are probably the most likely guys to be going. Ben Folkes as well is apparently going to be keeping the gloves according to Chris Silverwood. Do you think that the Brown Caps have enough depth in their squad to secure a place in Division 1?
I don't see why not. To be honest, Surrey have a lot of squad depth. That's something that's been noted. You know, I don't know what Rhys Toffoli is going to be doing with Red Bull cricket for the rest of the season. So, obviously, you've got to manage his injuries because he's had a lot, but he's someone who they can rely on later on in the season. Will Jacks, this was his first game. I was pleased to see him play because I think he should be playing every week. I think he's a great player. So glad to see Will Jacks play. Obviously, Jordan Clark, I mean, he's just quality. So, yeah, we all know how good Jordan Clark is. And then, you know, at the top of the order, I'm still not convinced of Mark Stoneman, to be honest. I think he's a good player, but...
Is that
not a bit harsh?
This is a guy who literally scored a century last week.
Yeah, but that's one century.
Yeah, but with Stoneman, he's got potential in terms of scoring runs. We know what he's capable of. We know the caliber.
He's all good at being capable of it, but if you don't do it every week...
Yeah, but he did it last week.
Yeah, but that's only once.
And nothing's stopping him doing that next week.
No, I appreciate that, but why hasn't he done that the other four or five for however many games?
We can't do it every week.
Sam Evans has. So, yeah, like Sam, I still think Mark Stoneman's a good player, but I'm not convinced that he's going to be Surrey's opener for however many. I would like to see Will Jacks open the line, if I'm honest. I think that would be a good counter-attacking move, especially with Burns and
you
Amler,
just want
Paxton
Roy and Jacks. The penny's just dropped.
Banton and Jacks at the top of the order.
The penny's just dropped.
I would like to see Jacks open the bat.
Jason Roy.
Good move.
Get them off to like 20 for,
oh, I forgot.
For
I forgot Jason,
four overs.
I thought he was done about for England. I didn't even twig. I mean, yeah, that would. No, you can't replace Burnsy, to be honest.
Well, he'll be with England.
Jacks. Oh, he will. That's true. So there you go.
No. Let's quash this straight away. Mark Stoneman is Surrey's opening batsman.
And another person actually who is Laurie Evans, who's not played. I don't think he's played a game yet, has he, Laurie Evans? So
he will at some point, though.
No, 100%. But that's good. That's what I'm basing my point is. It's good squad depth because folks, Pope, Burns, you take them out of the team, they're all going to go and play for England. Probably bring Topley in and move everyone up one. Jacks opens the bat and Laurie Evans comes in. That's a great team. That is a very, very good team. Hashim Amla could open the bat in. I mean, he's not a bad guy to either have a number three or open the batting. So, like, I think Surrey absolutely have the potential to reach Division One. It's just that they've not yet put their best foot forward. I think is the phrase I'm looking for there. So, 100%, I think they can.
Interesting. And this is the thing. Although this seems almost like a bit of a disappointing game. And of course, that is nothing to do with the teams, but the weather, of course. This result is pivotal. This has just blown everything open. I can't stress that enough. It really has. But you mentioned about Surrey, Joe. I mean, I have to ask the same thing about Somerset. Somerset's such an impressive county. They really are. I mean, they've still taken four wickets in 68 overs without Craig Overton, who has been the talisman. Potentially could be with the England squad, of course, for the New Zealand series and beyond that. But do you think Somerset now have got enough in the tank to actually reach Division 1 because they have got Hampshire firmly breathing down their necks. Gloucestershire have a game in hand over them at the top of the group and their next two games are incredibly, incredibly tough. Their next two games are against Gloucestershire in Bristol and then Hampshire in Taunton. Do you think that Somerset can maintain their position in the top two?
Yeah, I do, 100%. I think Somerset are third best side in the country at the moment, so...
Fair enough. I'm guessing behind
Gloucester. I'll give you a brief answer there. Yeah. I'll probably say it goes Lancs, Gloucester, Somerset for me.
That's fair enough. I mean, that's the thing with Somerset. We can't really go into tremendous detail about specifics this week. We talk about Somerset in great detail every single week. But fingers crossed, I really am keeping them firmly crossed that we get a lot more cricket in for the derby. because the first derby of the season between Gloucestershire and Somerset was absolutely fantastic. A historic victory for Gloucestershire. And again, if Somerset were to lose that game, though, Joe, the implications could be massive. If Hampshire were to win their game, and this is why this setup is actually quite good for the moment, isn't it? This conference setup for the time being, because anything is possible. Absolutely anything is possible. So Group 2, keep an eye on it. It is the group of death, as we call it. It is still very, very competitive. Surrey, I know you'll look at that and think there's a 27-point gap between them and Gloucester. I think Gloucester are pretty much home and hosed. Let's face it, as long as they get another win or a draw, basically, they're pretty much there. As long as they don't win, as long as they don't lose all four games. But yeah, the battle for second is going to be very, very interesting indeed. So let's move on from Group 2 then, Joe, and let's go on to Group 3. And you know what? We have to start with Kent versus Sussex, purely because of the Battle of the Ollie Robinsons. I thought it was fantastic drama, great excitement and entertainment while it lasted. And to be honest, OG Robinson, Kent's one, who's funnily enough, they have the same birthday as well. I found that out over the weekend. OE Robinson, OG Robinson, this is crazy. I know it really is. At this point, you're probably thinking they're related. But yeah, same birthday. Obviously different ages, but both called Ollie Robinson. But Ollie Robinson from Kent this week was absolutely fantastic. He really, really was. He really stepped up to the plate. Always nice to see a former guest here of TCCP in the runs. He scored 85. Zach Crawley as well also scored 85 for Kent. As the southeastern side actually put up a really good riposte with the bats in that second innings. I think Kent fans, I know it's been an incredibly, incredibly difficult start to the season, but this does give you a little bit of hope. It really should do, because you've got Crawley in the runs, Robinson in the runs, Billings could come back, of course, soon as well. And we also saw Tawanda Muyeye as well, which was interesting. Now, I didn't expect him to come into the team just yet, I'm going to be honest, because he's still a very, very young cricketer, only 20 years of age, been playing mostly school cricket and second 11 cricket. But honestly, give this guy some time. He is a special talent. He is a prolific run scorer in scores and second 11 cricket. He really is.
When he's on a plane to Australia at the end of the year.
I think that's a little bit far-fetched for the moment, but...
Yeah, no pressure.
Who knows? In the future, Tawanda, he's definitely a star in the making, in my opinion. And I feel like at times, in particular in this round of games, he did get out pretty cheaply, right, in his first innings. And I did see some comments on social media saying, oh, he's out of his depth, this, that, the other. He's a 20-year-old making his debut for Kent County Cricket Club, right? Give him a little bit of slack. That's all I'm saying. I know that it's been difficult down in the southeast at the moment, but there's no need to go after a young player. That's all that I'll say. Tawanda is a fantastic talent, got bags of potential. Give him time. Give him time. Now, in terms of another thing with Kent this week, which is unfortunate, and I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but Joe Denley is not playing for Kent at the moment due to personal reasons. So hoping that Joe's all right, hoping that he can come back into county cricket at some point, because Joe Denley, I know it's been an incredibly difficult start to the season for him as well, but he's an icon, isn't he? So for Joe Denley, hopefully he comes back, hoping that everything is good, of course, with the Denley family and, of course, Joe himself. But, yeah, that was a bit of a shame for Kent this week. In terms of some standout bowlers for Kent this week, though, Matt Quinn, he's been excellent. I must admit, I think that was a very, very shrewd loan signing from the defending champions Essex. He took 4 for 54 this week. Nathan Gilchrist, after taking 4 for 74 last week, took 3 for 51 this week. Again, continuing to impress. Again, another shrewd signing from Somerset this time. And then, of course, the man who we mentioned on every single podcast without any hesitation, any fail, week in, week out, Darren Stevens in the wickets yet again with 3 for 64. So it was a much more complete and improved performance from Kent. But Joe, I suppose I have to ask, I know it's probably a bit late now, let's face it, for Group 3, because you've got Yorkshire and Lancashire barnstorming it. Do you think that Kent can potentially challenge for Division 2? Maybe. I know that they had an absolutely horrid start to the season, but if they can generate some momentum now with guys like Muyeye coming in there, with guys like Sam Billings once he's back from quarantine, do you think that this Kent side has enough within them, that resolve, that grit, that fight to really make a challenge for Division 2? What are your thoughts on that?
No, I don't, to be honest. I think Kent are long gone now. Let's look at it this way. I know that Kent have Billings coming back, but you wouldn't say that Derby are going to make Division 2 or even challenge. You wouldn't say Leicester are even going to challenge. And you would have to say that Kent's group, our group, Lancashire's group, is harder than Derbyshire's group. So from that logic, I would have to say no. Maybe you've not explained that very well, but hopefully people get my logic. Basically, no is the answer. But, I mean, fair play to Kent. They've kind of brought it back a little bit this week. You mentioned Matt Quinn there, obviously taking a forfeit. Good signing, but why did they need no new bowler? They have Miguel Cummins. So, again, he's not a first-change bowler. He didn't get a wicket again, and he was pretty expensive, over 3.5 and over. So, he's a great signing, Matt Quinn, and obviously bowled very well, and I think he's a good cricketer, but they had Miguel coming. So, if they wanted an opening bowler, they could have just given him the new ball. Doesn't make sense to me. But, yeah, there you go.
Fair point. Although, he is taking wickets, though, Matt Quinn, so...
Oh, no, 100%. I'm not to take anything away from him. Just when the signing was made, they didn't need him because if they wanted a new opening bowler, they already had one waiting. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Someone else who I didn't mention actually this week, and I should have mentioned him first, was Jack Leaning. Actually, Jack Leaning was absolutely phenomenal. And in fact, after a really, really slow start to the season, he's beginning to generate some momentum as well now. So that's why I actually brought up that question, Joe, because these pieces are beginning ever so slowly to just slot into place. That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's me being wishful thinking, right? But if Jack Leaning, for example, can continue to score runs, Crawley while he's still here before, obviously a very, very busy summer with England, you've got guys like Billings potentially coming back in there, Haino Koon as well. You've got guys like Ollie Robinson, Daniel Bell-Drummond, of course. If these guys can find just a little bit of form in these final four games, who knows? Who knows? I think Division 1 is completely off the table. But Division 2, it's unlikely, but I wouldn't give up.
Yeah, Division 1 sealed, in my opinion, in terms of this group. As I said earlier, Lancs and Yorkshire. Lancs have a game in hand over Yorkshire. Lancs will finish top. Yorkshire will finish second. I don't know who finishes third and fourth and fifth and sixth.
So, yeah, interesting. Interesting, isn't it, with Kent? That's all I can really describe it as. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, it's not looking likely, of course, but stranger things have happened in county cricket. So who knows? They could make Division 2, depending if results do go their way. But of course, on the flip side, Joe, we've got Sussex, right? And this is massive this week. I think Hugh actually touched upon it earlier, didn't he, with regards to Jofra Archer and rushing him back into the setup. What did you make of this? Because Jofra now has been ruled out of the New Zealand series. He will not be taking any part in that. So of course, this is a two-part question now with regards to both Sussex and England. But with Sussex, Joe, do you feel like they should have rushed Jofra back? Do you think that they rushed him in a bit too quickly? He'd played one second 11 game, and then he was coming into this week's game, having not played a lot of cricket since coming back from India. Do you feel like Sussex should have given him a bit more time? Do you feel like they rushed him back in there? What are your thoughts with regards to this unfortunate situation with Jofra?
100%. Sussex rushed him back. I don't know whose choice it was. I don't know if it was England's or Sussex's to pick him in this game. To be honest, it's the sort of thing the ECB would do, isn't it? Let's be honest. Prove his match fitness and get him in for the first test. I'm not entirely sure, as I say, whose decision it was. But I think if it was England's, they should have been more careful. Because Jofra Archer could be one of England's best modern bowlers ever. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact, 100%. You know, he's currently England's best, like, genuine fast bowler. And obviously, Broad and Anderson, but, like, express fast bowler I'm talking about. So, you want to make sure that he's okay, that he's fully fit. They obviously didn't look after him very well. And he only bowled 18 overs in the whole game. So, I just think that was pretty poor by whoever decided to play him. I think that was a risk. And I hope he doesn't turn out to be... Hugh actually mentioned this, so basically nicking his thing. He actually mentioned this at the start before we started recording. He basically said he hopes he doesn't turn into another Tamar Mills, who's a great bowler but can only play white ball cricket now because of his injuries. So, yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen with Jofra because... As I say, he could be one of England's best ever, maybe best ever bowlers. Certainly the best ever modern day bowlers. So, yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen. Also, I was disappointed that he batted at 10. I will always say that.
Where would you want him to bat?
I would like him to open the bat. No, I'm joking. I don't know, maybe 7, maybe somewhere like that. Just
above Garson?
Yeah, why not? Just have a little whack, see what happens.
Sussex fans, let us know if you agree with Joe's disposition there about Joffre Archer coming up the batting order.
It's very entertaining, exactly. Is what I will say. Even if he gets not off one, he knows it's going to be a good golden duck. So.
It would be entertaining. And you know what, Joe? I completely echo that sentiment as well with Joffre. This guy is a generational talent. He really is. We know that. We've seen him for Sussex. We've seen him for Rajasthan in the IPL, Hobart in the Big Bash. And of course, for England, I think back to Headingley, and that 6 for 45 was absolutely electrifying. It really announced Joffre Archer to the world stage in Test cricket. We know that he's capable of these fantastic Test match performances, but we have to look after him better. We really do. Like, we cannot afford to risk this guy. He is going to be absolutely pivotal for the Ashes. Imagine a bowling lineup with him, Broad slash Anderson, and then Mark Wood. Okay, that is a terrifying prospect for an Australian batting lineup which has been struggling for runs at times in Test cricket. So we cannot afford to just be a little bit neglectful with Archer. We have to not wrap him up in cotton wool, but just be a bit more smart, be a bit more sensible. Let's not risk him, right? So I think it's the right decision. Let's not play him in the New Zealand series. This now does throw doubt over whether or not he'll play against India.
Even if he doesn't, I think that's okay. Because at the end of the day, then they obviously can't win the World Test Championship. They can't. Like, the New Zealand series is, in that sense, a dead rubber. Although it still matters. You still want to win. Be a great test against New Zealand. But effectively, it's a dead rubber. The India series, the start of the next Test Championship. But the Test Championship is the weirdest format in the world anyway. So, yeah, maybe England just prioritise the Ashes, which is the most important Test series in the world. And obviously the World T20 as well is the other thing. So you just have to make sure Joffre's fit for that. And then I guess even if he can only be fit for one, I would still take the Ashes over the World T20 every day of the week. Mm. So, yeah, you just have to make sure Joffre's fit for the Ashes. If he can't play in the World T20, then that's how it goes.
Mm. It's just such a shame though, isn't it? It's a spanner in the works in what is a massive year for English cricket. And now we've lost one of our best bowlers. So wishing Joffre a quick and speedy recovery, of course. We don't want this to be a career-ending one or anything stupid like that. Hopefully, fingers crossed, he can come back and be the electrifying seam bowler that we know that he can be in Red Bull cricket. But Joe, I suppose before we move on to Glam versus Yorkshire, just one final follow-up with regards to the Joffre Archer situation. And this extends to the listeners as well. Who fills the void? Who actually comes in for Joffre Archer for the New Zealand series, potentially for India as well? Do you stick with someone tried and tested, like a Mark Wood, for example? Or do you come in with a guy, I know you're going to say Sukeet Mahmood, I can already see the smirk on your face. Or do you go with a guy like Ollie Robinson, for example, who's been so impressive for Sussex this season? Do you go with a guy like Craig Overton, who hasn't really had a lot of international cricket to really show off his skills, but he's been so brilliant for Somerset? Do you go with a guy like Ollie Stone, who has an incredible test record in the two games that he's played? And you can shake your head all you want, Joe, but the fact is he took 4 for 68 on a pitch in Chennai, which offered absolutely nothing for seam, and 3 for 29 against Ireland at Lord's. This guy is a bona fide wicket-taking machine, and he bowls at excellent pace. You think about New Zealand as well. One of the games is at Edgbaston. Why not play Ollie Stone? So in your opinion, and of course in the listeners' opinions as well, I think I've just made my opinion very, very clear with who I think should be in there. But who do you think should fill the massive, massive void left by Joffre Archer's absence?
Well, I mean, if not Mark Wood, I obviously would want Sukeet Mahmood. I don't think Robinson or Overton could come into the side for Archer because they're different kinds of bowlers. I just mentioned that Archer is England's best express bowler.
But do we need an express bowler against New Zealand at Lord's? That's the only thing that you could say. And Ollie Robinson, I know he's not express, but Ollie Robinson bowls at good pace.
No, 100%. I'm not saying he's not... obviously, none of these guys are slow, but, I'm not saying that... Mark Wood bowls 95 miles an hour very regularly. Regardless of where you're playing in the world, you know, obviously some grounds stick out more than others, like Perth, for example. But regardless of where you're playing in the world, that's going to do damage to teams. For me, England have these bowlers available. They'd be stupid not to play them. You're not going to come and get, let's say, Australia coming over for the Ashes and playing at Lord's and not playing Cummins. I know Stark didn't play, but not playing Cummins, who's also an express bowler. You're not going to get that scenario. One of Cummins or Stark will always play for Australia, probably both. Jai Richardson, he's starting to come through now as well. So England would be stupid not to use would stone all my mood. I would say, obviously, those three and Archer.
Hang on. Because I know that a lot of people disagree with this. How are you not putting Robinson or Overton in there over Sakiba Mood? Do not get me wrong. Sakiba Mood is a fantastic bowler. He's a great young talent. He's a fantastic prospect across all three formats. But has he really justified a place right now above the likes of Craig Overton, who is the leading wicket-taker in county cricket right now?
Did Craig Overton go to India?
Doesn't make a difference. We're in England. You're in English conditions.
Craig
Overton
played
in the Bob Willis Trophy at Lords last year. Was Mahmood there with Lancashire?
Well, no, but that's not based on individual performances. That's based on team performances. So get into a final put
as their leading wicket taker.
But it doesn't matter because
that doesn't matter.
Mahmood was in England bubbles for a lot of last year, so Mahmood didn't play as much, which again says a lot to me. Overton wasn't in an England bubble. Mahmood was. Mahmood's been on England tours. Overton hasn't really. He's been to Australia.
But he's a prospect, Joe.
Overton's about 30.
No, Mahmood. Mahmood is the prospect. That's why he's in and around England.
Whereas you've got a guy like Overton
or Ollie Robb, for example, who can just slot in straight away.
You can only be a prospect for so long. Because how old is Ollie Robinson?
27 or 28 now.
And Mahmood's 24. So there's only about 3 years ahead between them. You can only be a prospect for so long. You've got to start your international career at some point. For me, I would give it to Mahmood. I mean, Ollie Stone, I'm not opposed to Ollie Stone playing. It's more just for banter that I say I don't like Ollie Stone or I don't want him to play for England. But the one thing I will say about him, genuinely being serious here, he's so injury prone that, similar with Mark Wood.
When was his last injury?
I don't know. You're the Ollie Stone expert.
Oh, no, that's going to stick with me from this podcast for the rest of time now.
But seriously, though, similar to Mark Wood.
Was he injured in India, though?
He is. Well, no, but that's not my point.
Has he been injured this season?
But that's not my point. He was injured for a lot of last season.
But if he's not injured, you're playing
him. But that's my point, though. Mark Wood, I would play Mark Wood, 100% Mark Wood. Wood, Broad, Anderson, and I would rather have Wokes.
Chris Wokes.
I would rather have Wokes, but it'll probably be Curran now in England.
It should be Wokes.
100%.
Love Sam Curran, but in England, you play Chris Wokes.
They'll probably put Tom Curran in there in England. But yeah, I mean, I would, similar to Wood, he can only play for so long and then he gets injured. All right, that's a fact. I feel like Stone is going to fall into that category of you have to manage his injuries so carefully. It's different kind of injuries to Archer as well, in the sense that Stone and Wood, they get so many different injuries. Archer's, it's just his elbow.
Yeah, similar Stone's Mills, mostly stress.
Just Mills back. Yeah. Stone has loads of like variety of injuries, so does Wood. That's just because they bowl 95-mile-an-hour rockets. So that's not to say, like, you know, that's not anything on them. That's just because of that's them as a cricketer. So yeah, I would probably have Wood, then Mahmood, then Stone as my three, but that's from my biased perspective. So, but in a short answer to your question, Matt Wood.
Okay, fair enough. I personally, for Lords, I'd be tempted to go Ollie Robinson. I'm going to be honest, down the slope at Lords, I think he would be a very, very interesting prospect, gets a bit of extra zip, a bit of extra bounce. At Edgbaston, though, I mean, only one. Surely you play Ollie Stone at his home ground. So for
Edgbaston as well, Chris Wokes has to play both tests.
As does Sibley.
Anyway,
the three Warwickshire players in there.
But at Edgbaston, like, that's why I always think you need to play your players at their home, a player at their home ground. So
yeah, look at Ashwin in Chennai.
Exactly.
He's a great example of that.
That's where they play their best cricket. They know their home conditions. They play there the most regularly. So 100%, I would be for playing Stone and Wokes. I would play Wokes in both tests anyway, like I say, because his second ground is
Lords.
He's like owns Lords. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they go.
Absolutely, it will be. And yeah, will be interesting. Chris Silverwood, when he releases the squad, I think we'll be waiting with bated breath. But Joe, moving on from Kent and Sussex then, let's go on to our sixth and final game of the week, which was between Yorkshire and Glamorgan. Now again, unfortunately, very, very rain affected. It really was. But Joe Root in particular was absolutely outstanding this week on a track which offered very, very little to the batsman. He scored 99. And our former guest here on TCCP, Dan Douthwaite, got him out for the second time this season. So I suppose Dan Douthwaite has got the wood over England's skipper, which is something which you'll probably be bragging about in the Glamorgan dressing room. But how impressed were you with Yorkshire's performance this week, Joe? I know that we didn't really get to see a lot of Yorkshire, but in terms of the ball, Stephen Patterson, again, really impressive. Jordan Thompson getting Marnus Labuschagne out. And then, of course, I just mentioned there, Joe Root with the bat. How impressed were you with Yorkshire this week? And then I have another question for you straight after.
So firstly, I think Joe Root is carrying Yorkshire quite a lot. And I think they're going to struggle when he goes, obviously, inevitably goes to play for England. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that Patterson's getting 47, I said it, I can't remember who it was. I think it was with Essex last week. And I said, you don't want your tail to be getting runs.
Yes, also, you did say that with Harmer.
Yeah. Well, it's similar with Patterson here. He's got 47. He's not as astute with the bat as Harmer, but he's going to go 47. David Willey, you'd expect him to be getting runs. He's got 3.
They were tough batting conditions.
No, 100%. And that showed that one of the best batsmen in the world got 10 and a duck. But Joe Root still got 99, which was, by the way, unlucky. It would have been brilliant to get 100 of 200, because that 50 strike rate would have been just quite satisfying. But Don Best, 20 runs batting. I don't know why he bats where he does. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So, yeah, Yorkshire kind of need to fit. I mean, Gary Ballins, you'd expect him to be getting runs. I don't think Cole Cadmore at the top of the order is working. I'd like to see Harry Brook get a go at the top of the order, potentially. Something a bit different. You know, I think he could be a good opening batter. Adam Live, he's in good form, but obviously got a duck. So the way I see Yorkshire is they're getting carried a lot by Joe Root. They need to sort it out, because Lank's bowlers will not take, will have no mercy. They will just rip through this. Honestly, like, I'm looking forward to playing this Yorkshire side, because I know, obviously, we've had Jimmy against Glamorgan last week. Apart from that, we've still been comfortably bowling teams out with what is, as I said, one of the top three attacks in the country. So, honestly, Lanks will rip through this Yorkshire batting lineup the way they're going. But, they really need to sort it out, Yorkshire, because, as I say, Lanks will give them no mercy.
Well, Joe, it's funny you mentioned that, because that was my exact question, actually, with regards to Joe Root. Do you feel like Yorkshire's fortunes in this year's County Championship actually rely a bit too heavily on Joe Root? Because I'm looking at their batting bonus points and they've only got 9 of them. They've actually got the exact same number as Kent, who are languishing in bottom of Group 3 at the moment. Now, compare that to other teams in the group. Northants got 15, Lancs have got 14, Sussex also got 14, and Glamorgan have got 12. And we haven't really seen a lot of big scores from this Yorkshire batting lineup. Do you feel like the White Rose have it within them to actually be County Championship contenders with this batting lineup? I know you're going to say no as a Lancs fan, but take the Lancs cap off for a second, because they clearly have a fantastic bowling unit. It's one of the best in the country right now as well, with the likes of Patterson, the likes of Jordan Thompson, the likes of Duane Olivier, guys like that. And Harry Brook has also been very impressive, took 3 for 15 this week. But I personally feel as though their batting hasn't quite come to the forefront yet. And I feel like for the time being, if it doesn't, I don't see them as serious contenders to the likes of Lancashire or Gloucestershire or Somerset, for example. But do you feel like Yorkshire's batting can turn it around? And if so, if they can do that, do you think that they could win the Champo this year?
No, I don't. I don't think Yorkshire have a chance of winning the Championship. Partly because I think Somerset are better than Yorkshire. Lancs are better than Yorkshire. Gloucester are better than Yorkshire. I don't even know who's going to qualify out of Division 1. That's quite a close one, as Hugh said at the start. But yeah, I feel like Yorkshire don't have a chance, to be honest. They'll qualify, but I don't think they have a chance.
Again, Joe Nutsy Nuttall, the resident Lancashire fan there.
Guaranteed they're going to win it now.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that you shouldn't have said that, given your look. When you say teams don't do well, they usually win the next week. So if Yorkshire win...
That's not the next... Oh, it is for them, isn't it? Yeah, oh dear.
If Yorkshire win their next game, you know why. Blame Joe Nutsy Nuttall, my Lancashire co-host, Lancs fans. But yeah, I do like the look of this Yorkshire team. As I said, I just feel like they need a bit more in the batting department to become serious contenders, but they are barnstorming Group 3 alongside Lancs. And also, just before we go on to Glam and wrap up today's podcast, Harry Duke as well. Just wanted to give a quick mention to him. Always nice to see guys that make their debut. So congratulations to Harry Duke for making his Yorkshire debut in this week's game down in Sapphire Gardens. So Joe, moving on to our final county then, it's Glamorgan. Now, what did you make of Glamorgan's performance in this game? Again with Yorkshire, we can't really, you know, delve into it too much. But one guy in particular is Marnus. Now, Marnus has struggled so far this season. He really has. And I say that through gritted teeth because I like Marnus just as much as most people. But what has gone wrong with Marnus so far, do you think, Joe? Jimmy, is there anything that you can see in Marnus's game right now which is maybe being a mental blockage to him, something that's preventing him from going on and scoring those big runs? What do you think it is, in your opinion, that is preventing Marnus from scoring these big totals?
Well, firstly, he knew he was going to have to face Jimmy, and I've pretty much confirmed that England are going to win the Ashes now, unless we're in for a Tim Payne masterclass in every single test. But I think Marnus, he had this problem as well, I think, in Australia, in the back end of the Shield, is that, and actually against India as well, is that he's struggling to face in-swinging deliveries, and he's either getting bowled or OBW. He seems to be falling over a few times. He really kind of needs to cut that out for the Ashes, obviously, for Australia. Well, I mean, obviously for Glamorgan as well, but in the grand scheme of things, he will feel the Ashes is more important than Glamorgan's season this year, unfortunately for Glamorgan fans. So, Smith is guaranteed to get runs. That's no doubt about that. Marnus is almost certainly guaranteed to get runs. But with the likes of Anderson, Broad, Robinson, Archer, if he's fit, these guys swing the ball in. Mm. All of these swing the ball in. Archer can obviously take it away. I mean, obviously can take it away as well, but predominantly they swing the ball in. So, yeah, he really needs to kind of fix that issue. I think that's where he's really going wrong. Maybe it wouldn't do him the worst just having a long net session against someone like Michael Nisa. Obviously, he's Queensland teammate. Maybe he can just have a long net against him as if he's coming, I don't know, at the score at like 5 for 1 or something like that. You know, basically an early inning scenario is what I'm trying to say. Just to get used to kind of facing that new ball bowling, because I think that's, as I say, that's where he struggled against India in the Border Gavaskar Trophy. That's where he struggled for Queensland at the back end of the Shield, and that's where he struggled now for Glamorgan. So, yeah, he really needs to kind of sort that problem out, I guess. But he's still one of my favourite players in the world.
Yeah, Joe, I agree. With Marnus, I said it with Tom Lamonby earlier this season, didn't I? Form is temporary, class is permanent. And with a guy like Marnus, we know what he's capable of. I feel like this is just a bit of a rough patch. And we know he's capable of scoring runs. So, Glamorgan fans, don't fear this too much, to be honest. I don't think it's anything to panic about, but fingers crossed Marnus can begin to get some substantial runs as the season progresses. You mentioned there Michael Nisa, Joe. I thought he was excellent again. I think he's been very, very good for Glamorgan so far this season. Took 5 for 39 in this particular game. Was an absolute menace for Yorkshire's batsmen throughout what little cricket was actually played in this game, of course. But he's been so, so impressive. Really has. And I like Glamorgan's bowling lineup. I really do. Him, Tim van der Hooten, David Lloyd's been fantastic as well so far this season. So, Glam fans, I mean, there's a lot to be quite excited about. There really is. This team has got quite a bit of promise. And if Marnus can come to the forefront alongside the likes of David Lloyd, for example, Kieran Carlson, Chris Cook, it's a good side. It is a good side. And I don't feel like Glamorgan get enough credit potentially this season, but tell you what, they are a very, very promising outfit indeed. And just before we do wrap up today's show, Joe, just wanted to mention one person in particular, and that is Kieran Carlson. Which round was it that I said that he could potentially be knocking England's door down? Was it 3 or 4? It was either the third or fourth round.
I can't remember. Yeah, it was one of them two.
But Kieran Carlson, so far this season, has been absolutely phenomenal. And this week was no different. It really wasn't. On a pitch that I said was so, so difficult for batsmen, Joe Root even struggled for rhythm. And that is England's captain. Kieran Carlson came in with a beautifully free-flowing 88 now from 84 balls. On the fourth day as well, which included 13 fours. He looked in great, great touch. And so far this season, funny enough, of course, Glamorgan had played an extra game. But right now, as of the sixth round, he's the second leading run scorer in county cricket with 552 runs, an average of 69. And Joe, you'll like his strike rate, 72.53. He still hasn't scored a six, though. So that is something that Kieran Carlson could be aiming for at some point this season. Who knows? Could get that against Lancashire. But he's a fantastic talent, obviously highly talented in South Wales, and rightfully so, because he has got a very, very high ceiling. Watch out for this guy. He's a fantastic batsman. And again, if he can score runs consistently alongside the likes of Marnus, Lloyd, those guys that I mentioned before, Glamorgan will be a very, very strong side, not just this season, but heading into the future. So Kieran Carson as well, had to mention him. I think a lot of him as a player is a fantastic, fantastic talent. And yeah, I don't think this will be the last that we hear of Kieran Carson at all. But yeah, Joe, I mean, that pretty much brings us to an end to today's episode. Just before we go, though, of course, game of the week. Who do you think that people should be looking out for in this week's round of games? I mean, for me, obvious, Warwickshire versus Essex. I think that is a massive game down in Chelmsford, taking on an Essex team with Simon Harm, who's just taken 9 for 80. Let's just say I've been more confident before in the past, but what do you say is your standout game for this week, mate?
I will have to say, obviously, other than Lancs, I will say both the derbies are happening this week, which is Gloucester and Somerset. Because
yeah, big game.
Somerset need to win that, yeah, obviously, to give... I think a draw will seal both sides into the next... certainly, we'll seal Gloucester, but we'll pretty much get Somerset over the line as well. And also Surrey against Middlesex, because this is the last week that Surrey have their big three players who I mentioned earlier. Obviously, Burns, Folkes and Pope. Plus, you never know anymore who could get called up for England. We don't know that yet. Maybe Jordan Clarkson with the chance. So, yeah, this is the week that kind of Surrey really need to capitalise, and Middlesex are in terrible form at the moment. So that could genuinely happen. They could hammer Middlesex, especially if they bat first. It could be over within 3 days. Like they could absolutely hammer them. So, yeah, the two derbies for me, obviously the Lions game as well.
Yeah, the derbies are going to be massive for different reasons. Of course, Surrey want some revenge on Middlesex, don't they? But yeah, a fantastic round. Please do watch it if you can. Fans are also back as well, so that's a massive, massive boost. And hopefully no more games will be played behind closed doors for the rest of 2021 and beyond. But that does bring us to an end to what's been a bumper episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in, guys. And as always, we'll see you on the next one.